Welcome. The March 21st, 2016 regular meeting will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
I know.
All right. Mrs. Moak, would you call the roll?
Mr. Bochinski? Mr. Buckles?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Elger?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mrs. Mills?
Here. Just a note, Mr. Bochinski is at a work meeting tonight, but he cannot join us because he's in meetings all evening, so he sends his hello and regrets.
All right, with that, we have some honored guests tonight. We're going to start with our junior Spellapalooza champions tonight, and to introduce them is the principal of Lincoln School, Linda Schweikhofer. So, Linda, do you want to do the initial introductions?
We actually have one student who's not here.
Okay.
Yet, Spellapalooza is a fundraiser that's sponsored by the GCRC, the Island Children's Resource Center. And Lincoln School staff, along with staff of PTA, sponsor a team each year. Normally what we've done is we've sponsored a team with a PTA member, a teacher, and a student. Over the last few years, there have been more and more student teams that have been offered, and so we decided this year that we're going to sponsor a student team, a student-only team. As part of our PTA, what they do is we have a spelling bee, group spelling bee, and the four top winners of our school are represented today for our team, which is called Abe's Word Busters. So I'd like to introduce you. I'm very proud of this team. Before I introduce them to you and show them, and they can have a chance to show you how amazing they are, I want you to understand just the level these kids went to. Mm-hmm. So the last few years have been some youth teams, and they're high school, junior high, and elementary school. And so they've been awarding a first place team for the youth team. And they also have a first place team for the adult team. Not only did these kids earn the first place team for the youth team, high school, junior high, and elementary school, they took second overall.
Yeah.
As long as I've been involved in the Spellapalooza, it's been quite a few years, never had a youth team that actually went to that level that these kids had. So I'd like to take a moment to introduce you to Catherine Kreinen. Come on up. Anastasia and Renopoulos. These are fifth graders. Mihir Sharma, fourth grader. And Tavia Shirla. Thank you. You would be blown away if you had the opportunity to see these kids in action. I know Dr. Gordon was one of the judges, and he has a great job that I normally do when we have the student one here at our school that has to say, I'm sorry, that is not correct.
Yeah.
That's a really rough job. But Erica was also there, and I don't know if anybody else, I know our parents, of course, were there. But they are amazing kids, and they run circles around me, and there is no way I would ever stand up in a spelling bee against any of these kids. Right?
With that, who would like to stand up next to these kids and spell a few words? Anybody?
No, absolutely not. Erica, our board president, tried to get us to put together a team, and you could see that none of us were there.
Are the words?
Yeah.
So they're going to show off a little bit. We're going to give them a couple words, and how it worked was the team comes together, they talk about it, and then they come out and spell the word. Okay.
What about going after the board?
Yeah. Well, any board members who's willing, I don't want to volunteer tell anybody, but any board member wants to raise their hand first to try it, they certainly may. Okay? All right. So let's start. Siamatrius. Okay, get together. I know. Anybody? Board?
I don't think so.
What I'll will. Okay, wait, you guys wait. You guys wait. You guys wait. I just want to see if any board member just wants to try.
We'll say the word again.
Say it again.
Say the word.
Psiomatris.
Use it in a sentence.
Having wavy hair.
Having wavy hair.
What would I know about that?
Yeah, I know. For you and I.
Yeah, it's not that.
All right.
Okay. Psiomatris.
I'll try.
Okay.
You guys trying? Go ahead. Stephanie,
are we not? We're not.
You guys can confer too.
Can we confer?
Yeah. You know what? I'm really proud of you guys for trying. Having wavy hair, unlike Dr. Gordon.
I like your spelling.
You're the president.
You go.
Okay.
I'm going to defer with the kids.
I think that's a much wiser decision.
Yeah. My money's on the kids.
All right. Yeah.
So our consensus here is Syamatris.
Okay, we will hold.
Hold.
Now the students have an opportunity. You want to confer one more time?
We got it.
Oh, sorry. That was the other thing. Right, they did not lack confidence.
Okay. Syamatris.
Does anybody want to venture a guess who was correct?
Oh, my gosh.
All right.
How do you do that?
You should have seen these words that were coming out.
They were nasty.
It was crazy. I know.
They were nasty.
Glockenspiel. I know. These were literally the second round words that they had to choose from. Try again. Get your buddy.
I lost on this one during the B. We all got to do our own list, and I got this one wrong.
Looks like we've got three participants down here. Oh, yeah, yeah. Hold yours. Hold yours.
Okay. Patrick, Stephanie, Dean, what do you think?
Money's on the kids.
I'm asking how to slice up the budget.
All right, board, are we ready? Let's go with one. Dean? Dean.
G-L-O. Did you want to change something?
No, I think that's right. There might be an H in there, though.
Okay, go.
G-E-N-S-P-I-E-L.
Students, you want to give it a shot?
G-L-O-C-K-E-N-S-P-I-E-L.
All right. The reigning champions and still undefeated. Our students. Way to go. Way to go.
We're getting better.
We are better.
We actually had some of the letters.
I know you have hope. All right. I just want to say thank you to you guys for putting on such an incredible display at Spellapalooza, winning the youth championship, but then competing with all the adults overall. You guys are so impressive. It's just it's great to see the type of thinking that goes on display daily from each and every one of you guys. I'm blown away at your abilities. Board members?
Well, I think you just showed us why you deserve the praise that you do. And like I said, we weren't brave enough to try to put a team up against you guys. So, nice job.
Thank you. Thank you.
And it seems like it was smart that we
did. Another
would have been a way.
Yeah,
guys,
exactly.
We're talking about the budget in May. April,
yeah. You can spell it out for
us.
I just congratulations, and to our two fifth graders moving on to Hadley,
yeah.
Congratulations, and bring all that energy to Hadley, and for the others too, keep it going at Lincoln.
You guys plan to be part of the Spellapalooza next year? Maybe. All right.
Uh-oh.
We're going to have to do some convincing. Thank you guys so much. Parents, thank you for all your work.
Thank you. Linda, thank you. So much.
Oh, yeah. Linda.
You guys, do you remember who the team was that came in first place? Were there
the librarian.
Yeah. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. But you're going to lose to anybody. You lose to the librarian. Well, nice job.
They all show up on Jeopardy.
Yes, we knew them win.
Get your autographs. That's right.
Get your autographs.
Thank you, Mrs. Trefauer.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Well, to keep with the celebration, yeah, you're good.
You guys get
go home and spell. Go forth and spell.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you so
thank
much.
You, thank you, thank you, thank you. Unbelievable.
Oh, they're so cute. So smart. So cute.
I like that they spelled Glockenspiel together in harmony.
I kind of thought it might have been taunting us.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was a little bit at that point. All right, the next on our celebration tour is the Glen Allen Chamber of Commerce District 41 Educator of the Year. Tonight, Jeff Burke, we're honored to have him here to introduce our Educator of the Year. So if the two of you want to...
All the cute kids.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So I have the letter that Kirk wrote a letter that he read at the breakfast that we had at the Chamber of Commerce a few weeks back. So I have a copy of it, and then I'll add a few words of my own at the end. I promised Kirk I wouldn't mess with his letter or any of his writing on the screen verbatim. But we are very, very proud of Wayne at our school, as we always are. But, so this is for Wayne. Wayne Wittenberg has taught for 29 years at Ben Franklin Elementary. I've had the privilege of working with him for the last 9 of those. Wayne is so deserving of this award. He is an amazing teacher. I could tell you story after story of how Wayne has gone over and above the call with his service to his fellow teachers and staff members, with students who needed a little more time and attention, with parents who needed a little more time and attention, and with this principal. Teaching is an increasingly difficult and complex job, and Wayne is among the hardest working, most dedicated, most professional, most collaborative, most caring individuals I've worked with. He is an innovator, always among the first to try something new in his practice. Several times over the last 9 years, I have needed to ask Wayne to switch grade levels or to take on something that many would regard as a difficult change. Wayne has always responded with, "I'll be teaching kids, right? Whatever you need me to do." Wayne has been a role model for countless children, teachers, and certainly for me. He is everything you would want in a teacher for your child. He is reflective, professional, organized, patient, kind, and intelligent. Perhaps most of all, Wayne is all in as a teacher. He brings his A-game to work every day. An educational researcher that has gained a lot of our attention recently is an Australian man named John Hattie, who has analyzed literally thousands of research studies and boiled down what the most effective strategies or factors in education. One of the things he talks about is having teachers who have a passion for what they are teaching. They don't have to be content area experts or masters of instructional strategies, but having teachers who are engaged and interested in the learning that is going on in their classroom day after day is one of the highest impact factors Hattie has identified. This defines Wayne's quality as a teacher. Has never lost that sense of wonder and an interest and excitement in learning new things right along with his students. Congratulations, Mr. Wittenberg, Kirk Samples Principal. And I've worked with Wayne as a teacher, as a math coach, and as an assistant principal, and I echo everything Kirk says. We're very proud of you, Wayne. Congratulations.
I'd just like to say what an honor and a privilege it has been to teach in Glen Allen for 29 years. You know, the people that are here, the staff, the administration, the boards, all through these years have always had children as their number one goal. I could not imagine anywhere else that I would want to teach or be. I've actually dragged a few people here. Chris Blazek, I was his coach in high school, and he was in Bensonville, and I said, Chris, you have to come over to this wonderful place, this district where... they seem to do everything right, and they just have this incredible drive to do what's best for children. So it's been a great 29 years, and I'm going to miss it. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
We'll miss you.
Thank you, Wayne. shared at the last board meeting the opportunity to sit with your family and what I've learned from you, being in your classroom, having conversations with you. You are all of those things that Kirk and Jeff said about you. But I think the thing that really defines you is you're also this incredibly good person who really cares, who deeply cares about his kids, those around him. And it really shows in your family. At that celebration, and I think that's a true reflection of any person, is their family. And my goodness, the reflection was... what was shining bright that morning. You have so much to be proud of, but you are, every time I've had a conversation with you, you're so genuine and caring about everybody around you. And that's what we heard from your kids. I had a great conversation with your daughter. It was just a wonderful opportunity to learn more about you. So thank you for all your service, everything you've done for our district, for our staff, students, and for the countless others. This is the other piece that I learned about Wayne, how much he gives to others outside of D41. It was just a real privilege to sit with you and your family 2 weeks ago. So thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you, Wayne.
Other?
I can speak to the same thing that I sat there with your family, and it was a wonderful morning. What I thought was funnier after that, because I've already written you since then, is I have a swim coach. Because if a spelling coach couldn't help me. So I have a swim coach, and I happened to tell her about meeting you and your family. And she hasn't had a kid in the district in 20 years and knows you and went on and on about the effect you had on her children. And this is from 20 years ago. So, you know, that's a pretty good testament for someone who hasn't had a kid in school for the last 20 years to still remember the teacher and to go on and on about it. So I think it just supports why you've won this award. Thank you.
Kurt?
I've known Wayne a long time, probably 23 years. And something that you don't know about Wayne is that he knows how to cut phones.
Yes, there is.
No, it was our house about 5 years ago. But anyways, he did a great job. Hardworking guy.
So we need a tuck pointer?
He's our guy? Need a tuck pointer. He's probably retired at this point.
Yeah.
But he could advise.
He could advise on tuck pointer.
I'll negotiate the fee. But Wayne, what... Back in the day, there was a principal at Franklin named Doug Craig. And Doug once said to me that I can teach teachers how to teach, but I can't teach my little kids. And the thing that I always heard from, you know, my wife taught on staff with him for a number of years. I've always heard from his peers that Wayne loved kids. And so, and that made, you know, he's a great teacher too, but the fact that he loved kids, so he had both X's in the boxes marked off. So, Wayne, you know, enjoy your retirement. Thank you. Job well done.
Okay. It was a pleasure to be there. Meet your wife, who's also an educator. She teaches in Lombard 44, right? And a daughter who teaches in Bensonville, he said. I had a great conversation with her as a new, kind of excited new educator. But the article that the Daily Herald did, and kudos to the writer, I think it was Caitlin Smith who did that article, just a great article. I hope that you have extra copies of it. But the thing that I smiled at, just having gotten to know you a little bit through some activities together, Team 21, some other things, was when you talked about your first year as a teacher, I think, or second year, and you shifted tables around and put them in clusters and collaborative learning, and a veteran teacher said, you know, what are you doing? And you said, it's like they need to talk to each other, they need to connect, and, you know, all these many years later, you're still doing that. So thank you for that and being such a great role model. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Wayne, thank you. And you are more than welcome to part ways. We will close our eyes for a second.
Thanks, Wayne.
Jeff, same for you. Yeah.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. All right. next up, just a quick overview of the selection or evaluation of the school district attorney. My weekly update, gave the policy on that piece. I shared with the board the selection and evaluation. So I'm going to be seeking that direction from the board as to which way do they want to go. Are we looking at an evaluation? Are we looking at opening it up for an RFQ process, which would be pretty, it would be a lot right now on staff with Becky transitioning off, Cheryl transitioning in the coming months. But quite honestly, I just want to turn it over to the board to give me direction. Mm-hmm. Either on that evaluation side of the house or on the RFQ side.
Well, I had a question when I saw this, because I know we talked about this just a little bit high level at the last meeting, and it was, I guess I wanted to know what the genesis of the request was, why the request was put out there. And then I did ask Drew about the rubric that we had used for the architect. So I'm just curious. I know that Kurt, you had requested the policy, and I know we got that. Okay. But just the genesis of the request.
We haven't looked at them in a long time, so I just think everybody should be reviewed, and we should be reviewing how you know, from a standpoint of hold them accountable, you know, we should be taking a look at them. So for me, you know, I think our new finance person's probably done this a few times in her life, so it's probably not a new thing for her. You know, maybe she doesn't have to do it day one, but I think we should, you know, move forward with my opinion that we should start reviewing it. So,
And I don't want to put words in Joe's mouth, but I agree with him. It's a selection, and you know, it may come out on the top again if they're the best. And we have a qualification, and we have a history, but I think it's always good to just to kick the tires every once in a while. It's not a discredit to the service. I don't think it's a discredit to the service to ask for this. It's just, you know, you just want to dust things off, brush it off.
Take a look at it.
So
just for clarification, that's where dusting things off and kicking tires, is that through the evaluation or the RFQ? I just want to make sure, because they're two different things. So, you know, if we're doing that evaluation, just briefly, that first criteria is a strong background in educational representation and multifaceted experience in the areas of federal grant compliance, human resources, contract negotiations. Next one, that approaches logical, complete, with high confidence that our interests will be addressed appropriately and timely. Third, a clear communication plan between the firm and the school board is clearly outlined, and a clear understanding of pricing structure. So those are some of those pieces that you have.
I just want
to make sure I know which.
And even in, you know, I know we're not a corporate setting, and I tend to do that, but even in corporate settings, those preferred vendors that do a job well done over and over, year after year, you do review those every year, just kind of like you do, but every 3 to 5 years you kind of go a little deeper.
Okay.
And I don't see a harm in that, and I, you know, if it's not proven right now to staff's time, I'm not saying this isn't a burning issue, but maybe before a year in, we have a look and say, you know, it's probably going to come out the same. But as an executive committee, we just, you know, you got to go a little deeper every once in a while.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Are you comfortable in that summer time frame?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not beholden to this being done by the end of the school year.
Okay.
I'm not either.
That's not a...
Okay.
Okay.
I'm assuming you talked about it finance, and I have wasn't at that meeting, or somehow it came out of that.
This is right here.
Okay. So what I wanted, but when it came up at the meeting, I leaned over to Drew and I said, didn't we have a rubric for professional services? So I was able to find this one. What I did was I pulled out the numbers, but what this was is the language that was used for the architect, and just a little bit of a history on it. It was actually initiated by Finance Committee, actually. I think it was like 2012 or 2013. And it was to be able to take a look at kind of high level before the Finance Committee would recommend to do a full RFQ. So I made copies of this just so that you would have it. Again, the language and the qualifications and in the general skills is aligned to architects, which is what is up here. But the rubric itself, I think the Finance Committee did a nice job putting this together to at least do high level, to your point, Patrick. Maybe it's these all come in at sevens and eights and whatever, and the answer is provided. But this is that little bit of a open up the hood and take a look at it, so folks can take a look at it. And we would need to obviously recast the qualifications connected with the policy. But, you know, we can talk to Joe about that.
I mean, yeah, I'm just understanding, but this seems like a good evaluation, but this is something that maybe we should be doing every year or every other year as a board, with the architect or the attorney, because it sounds like when it was created, because if the scores were low, then do you want to...
It would. The whole intention was...
Saying is, regardless of what we're saying, the scores aren't necessarily low right now, but it's been a long time, and so we should be just looking a little deeper with the RFQ. That's my take on it.
I just wanted to pass it out to at least give people a view of what has been used before, to do a little bit of a high level. Drew?
As I recall, when this issue came up with finance, you know, and I think it was, you know, every couple of years or every 3 years. You know, and there was supposed to be a rotation, and you know, kind of go through these. You know, so you don't want to send these out. You know, for all these, you know, for all the services all at the same time. But I think the concept here was that we, as a finance committee, we're gonna look at these services once a year and go through the rubric and make our assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this rubric will work for architects. It'll work for engineering services. It'll work for attorneys. It'll work for the accountants.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my opinion is that we go back and bring this back to finance, have finance adjust the rubric so it fits what you want to look at. If it's the attorneys, we look at legal services,
mm-hmm.
modify our rubric, and have finance give us a recommendation in terms of, you know, either yes, we're good with what we have based on the assessment, or no, we want to go to an RFP. So I really think this would start in finance. So mm-hmm. I would recommend it go back to finance for some modification to the rubric and a recommendation from finance.
Okay. Well, that was
the. I don't even know it need to go. I mean, just me. I don't need to spend time at finance. I'm the one that suggested. I think my own person. I mean, and I'm not sure, you know, where Patrick stands on that, but you know, it hasn't. We have not reviewed them in a long time. I think they need to be really reviewed and vetted. And you know, we're always talking about time and everything else. I'm not sure that I want to spend a lot of time recreating this and scoring them when in the end. You know, I think we should take a look at them. So, for me, I'd just rather skip that step and, you know, move forward with the RFQ process and make sure that we really vet them, which we haven't done in a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I have a question about the RFQ process, and maybe this will be for Becky.
Mm-hmm.
When we do a professional service like this, when we go through an RFQ process, it's not about a low bidder, is it? It's about
services.
It's about services. Yeah. That the intent isn't to do that. Yeah. And we just went through this with the architect, right? Okay. I can sense that my fellow board members would like to move forward with an RFQ. I really don't think it's required, but I do appreciate their wanting to do it. And I think that we could do it, but again, probably in the summer would be better than.
I've got a couple of colleagues who have just recently gone through this. I'll gather those RFQs for Cheryl.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be good. Okay. Well, the reason I brought this up, and I'd like to actually have finance maybe keep this as a part of their toolkit, because I do think that it keep the again the intention of it was to be able to do this on a more than an every 2 or 3 years, but just to keep an eye on how is audit doing, how are some of these other services doing. So I think there's great value in it, and an RFQ process is lengthy and certainly takes a lot of time. So if we're moving this out to the summertime and there's agreement to do that, that's fine. But I'd like to have this brought back to finance to at least take a look at it, so that we might get into a more of a cycle instead of, well, it's been 6 or 7 years, where we have more continuity mm-hmm. around it.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. But we spend a lot of money with this firm.
Yeah, uh-huh. No, there are no questions, but like we do with our architect or auditor annually, that type of thing too. So
okay, so direction is that we're going to be seeking an RFQ. I think they are an RFQ because they do have to submit prices
right.
with a law firm, which
yeah,
is different than the RFP.
Architect.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are price implications here that you will be able to review
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the architect.
Although they are lobbying at the state level to get that out.
To change
yes,
that piece. Yeah.
Interesting. Attorneys lobbying attorney.
So we'll... Sorry.
I just had one other quick question. When I was on finance, Bob had a timetable and said, you know, that said we were going to review these different professional services, and it was on a rotational basis. And I'd like to see if we could find that and kind of get back to that.
So where we're at right now is we have a new architect, new construction manager. So we've gone through RFPs and RFQs the last 2 years on those two pretty critical pieces. But yeah, your point is well taken that after we get this done.
There's a timing in terms of doing these things.
Absolutely.
So to be this least disruptive.
Yeah. Right. No, I totally get it.
And that there was a whole timing piece to that, and I'd like to have that found so we can kind of
use
get
this
back
the way it was
that.
Intended to. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. My point is that we have these brand new individuals on board, so that timeline is it's skewed immensely from where it actually would have been. But we'll put that one together as well. All right. We'll get that into Cheryl's hands when she gets on ground in May.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Oh, okay, board reports. I know that I was able to send a couple to Nancy. Are there any other board reports? Yeah.
I can do it.
Send it later. Yeah, that way she'll have it to attach. Yeah.
Be removed from your position tomorrow.
It's because the meeting was literally the day after the board meeting, and so
yeah.
It just slipped my mind. So for my board reports, I went to the Churchill PTA meeting. They had a lot of people there at their PTA meeting. And I'll just kind of cover some of the highlights. They had Joyce from the Glen Ellyn Children's Resource Center came and did a presentation because they're trying to secure funding to expand the Resource Center to Churchill. Mm-hmm. That's currently it's at Lincoln, and they'd like to have it at Churchill as well as Lincoln. And they're looking, I think they want to secure $200,000, which would be enough money that they could operate there for 2 years. And then hopefully once they could get that funding, it would just be self-funding and easy to fundraise after that. So she came and talked to the PTA about that, which I know would be a great thing for the schools and for the people to be able for that to be successful. And I think there's a group of parents on the PTA that they're actually working to try to see how the PTA can help support those efforts at all. And then another interesting thing was there, which I hadn't heard of before, was the Digital media specialist Edie Aldrich gave a presentation on a makerspace that they created at Churchill, and it was really interesting. Like they set up the space in the library, and I'm not even 100% sure how it works. But kids can go down; they have mm-hmm. get a pass during certain times of the day to go down there, and they have all different things they can do. Even basic stuff from building Legos to using robotics, basically kind of like building, creating, designing. And as Scott Clustis called it, just tinkering. Like mm-hmm. the advantage of just tinkering and learning, not having to have a set outcome or design anything or create anything specific, just kind of play around mm-hmm. and see what creations they can come up with. So they're doing some neat things with that there. And other than that, they just talked to give updates about their fundraising and how they're going to spend some of their funds for things with the school. So that was a good meeting. Two other quick things. I went to the Hadley production of Beauty and the Beast. I don't know if anybody else
has been there. Yeah, unbelievable. Great.
Awesome show. I'm a little biased. I have a child in it, I will admit. Yeah. But he was a fork.
He was a fork.
An enchanted
and did a fine job.
Enchanted object. That sounds so much better than a fork.
Yes. Seriously, these shows, if no one has gone before, I know they always sell out. Tickets sell out in advance, but it's a great thing to take your kids to. It's like seriously going to a Broadway show, and it's just in Glen Ellyn at Hadley. And the kids are just awesome. I mean, some of those kids are singing voices.
Really talented,
ridiculous. Yeah. So shout out to all the kids at Hadley.
Absolutely.
For an awesome job. Well done last weekend. Sold out shows. Beauty and the Beast. Now my younger kids are singing it. And the last thing, I went to Blackhawk Middle School this weekend. The symphonic band, and I make sure I get this name right, the Hadley String Orchestra, competed, and they were competing to qualify for state, which they both did. They both got Division I ratings, so they qualified for the state competition, which will be in April, so congrats nice. To the Symphonic Band and the String Orchestra, and happy for that.
Nice job.
Those are all the things I've been to.
Great.
Thank you. Thanks for the updates.
Erica, others. I was supposed to be at Lincoln on last Wednesday, and I got to my office and then couldn't get out of my office.
Oh, so. I know that feeling. Yeah, no, thank you for that.
I was going to make a quick shout out. This wasn't really a board report as much as it is just something that goes on in Glen Ellyn that we should all know about. The Glen Ellyn Speed Skaters, one of their students I know is a junior high student at Hadley. She just competed up in nationals in Madison, Wisconsin. Her name is Bella May. She came in third in her class. So, but the entire team in Glen Ellyn, which makes up a lot of students that go to our schools, did very well on the national level. And Glen Ellyn has a long history of being a speed skating town. It looks like they're back.
Very cool.
Great. Two quick reports. One is CIT, which was on the 17th, so last week. I know I've mentioned we're doing a book study of a book titled Leaders of Learning, How District, School, and Classroom Leaders Improve Student Achievement. We've been kind of splitting into two groups and then going into small groups to come back and share some takeaways from the book and a deeper dive. For these particular chapters, the discussion was around how professional learning communities focus on objectives to curriculum, and then being able to look at levels of knowledge that we have for students. And the other chapter, which was interesting, focused on designing and scoring our local assessments and how we're reconsidering common assessments in the focus around a professional learning community. So it was interesting. We did a long-range plan update, looked at just at a high level the draft of the board's strategic priorities. I know the board knows that our strategic priorities were to those two Saturday mornings that we spent delving into. Those are now in a draft form to the continuous improvement team, so they're taking a look at that. And we did an activity as a group individually, and then a small group, a large group discussion around the profile of an eighth grade student coming out of District 41, and what does that mean, what does that look like, and those characteristics to really attach those to some of the priorities that the board has provided. So that was interesting. Meetings coming up, we'll follow, look at Teams for Excellence updates for the end of the year report and also at PARC. The other meeting, and Erica Craviel attended that with me last Friday morning, was at a LEND member meeting over in District 89 at Case Office. And I know that Paul provided for the board an update in his weekly update. But just a quick review, looked specifically at the FY17 budget for the state of Illinois. Dr. Michael Conley, who's a superintendent in Keeneyville School District, and then Mrs. Vicki Talbert, who's the superintendent for Queen Bee 16, which is one of our feeders to Glenbard West, were downstate and Skyped into our LEND meeting so they could give us an update on some of the meetings with state legislators and some of the hearings going on down there. Absolutely no movement on the state budget. I know everybody knows that. But the issue that is now newer and more concerning is that a K-12 budget looks like it's in jeopardy. And so that is causing some significant concern for all districts, certainly DuPage County as well. Today at 1 o'clock, there were a number of superintendents and board members who got together with Peg Agnos, who is the executive director for LEND, which is the Legislative Education Network of DuPage, to talk about a comprehensive approach to our state legislators. A lot of our districts have been talking individually. I know that Chris Nybo sent this board a letter along with other boards on his concern about it. But we'll keep you posted, and the board will be receiving updates from Peg and through the superintendent as well. But this feels very different. We had several superintendents at that meeting Friday morning who said, schools, there will be schools that will not open, Queen Bee 16 being one of those. So they'll already be in the red this year if there's no budget passed. And if we, I know that we know that impacts everybody because education is holistic, but certainly if those students from Queen Bee are matriculating up to Glenbard West, then they're with students from all these other feeders as well. And so it does have an impact. So we'll keep you posted, and it's a good opportunity for certainly the board to give some voice to this.
Is that how it works, Erica? If a school closes, then the surrounding districts How's that work?
Oh, no, no, no. I was not making that connection. What I was saying is that, you know, that Vicki in particular talked about how challenged they are with their fund reserve, and that, in fact, if the budget doesn't get passed, which means none of us will get our funding. Now, for District 41, that's, what, $2 million? It's about 8%, right? Mm-hmm. So certainly we can ride that wave. But there are districts, schools, certainly South Suburban schools have already been talking about their impact points, and then DuPage County, which I think is misunderstood in many ways by the state legislators in terms of the number of students we have in free and reduced positions, number of homeless students, our transportation for that. So a lot of things that I think are not completely understood. So again, it feels differently because it's not the state budget isn't passed. It's a K-12 focus now, and certainly higher education has already felt it. I know we've probably all seen the billboard that Western Illinois put up on 294 saying our tuition is lower, so they're in competition with each other. So it's a real concern, and so we'll stay posted on that. But I just wanted to bring that to attention as well. So that was that. And then I didn't mention this at the last meeting. I think it was similar to Kurt and Stephanie where it just had happened, and so it was not in my radar. But I was able to take a little bit of time out of work and go to a morning session of one of the Regional Office of Education Institute days. And it happened to be over in Naperville, and the speaker was the principal of a school in Berwyn, Jerry Majeski, who talked about social-emotional issues for children, especially LGBT students, on the heels of District 211 and some of what's going on, certainly locally but also nationally. And so it was a very interesting conversation, a lot of social workers there, and just conversation around that part of the world of education. So it was good to be there and just be a listener to that conversation. So I was glad to be able to do that.
Cool.
Yeah. And that's it. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. Good. All right. Public participation. Would like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a form, which is in the entrance into the building here, and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we would ask in the interest of time that you please forego making them and that you provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have, and we always appreciate that regardless. Personal complaints, criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. For those offering public statements, just as District 41 expects staff, students, and this board to be respectful, your consideration of this is also appreciated. Profanity, interruption, and/or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. Questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representative for a response as responses are warranted. Is there anyone present who would like to address the board? Mrs. Moak?
Jeff Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. And again, reminder, I know we're more used to this now, but we live stream our meetings, and so thank you for coming to the podium and speaking up to get captured on our mics here. Good evening.
Evening. 2 weeks ago, we had a presentation by School Perceptions surveying parents and staff on a number of issues. Lowlights of the board discussion seemed to hover around the staff's answers and comments about the board. The thing is that most of the staff doesn't live in the district, and they have no business answering questions about the board or making what appears to be orchestrated comments about two particular board members. The areas that include staff answers about the board and any comments on the board are tainted by this non-residential point and should be removed off the District 41 website. I brought this same point up over a year ago when the community survey was tainted with heavy non-resident staff involvement. What is really happening is that District 41 administration upset with two board members that tried to make them pay for their own TRS benefits, used this opportunity incorrectly given by Dr. Gordon to take shots at not only the two board members, but community members as well. A number of comments referenced those board members' treatment of teachers. I've not heard such comments, and I've been here at every meeting for years. These anonymous staff members should do their homework before making erroneous accusations. It seems that this was an unfair opportunity taken by Dr. Gordon in hopes of besmirching the two newest board members. The superintendent has done a major disservice to the two newest board members by posting these comments on the website. Some of us are able to see this all for what it is. Dr. Gordon, please do not repeat this mistake on the next survey. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Mrs. Moak? All right. Thank you very much.
Wait.
All right. Discussion.
We got an email from a parent that said she'd be here in the 6 weeks. Did you see it?
No.
It didn't get sent until 6:24. I just noticed it. Sorry. I just saw it.
Can we attach it into the...
Yeah, can we attach it?
Just attach it.
They asked if we could leave this below on the afternoon public participation. It's not pressing.
Is that from Ferris?
Yeah, from...
I was trying to read it after finance.
I found the answer to you. Would
comfortable if we just attach it? And
not really long.
I'm unable to. I'll read it into the record.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
Dear Board President Erica Nelson, I'm.
Sorry.
I went to her link. Okay. Dear Board President Erica Nelson, I'm unable to attend the board meeting tonight. I kindly ask if you would read this below. Sorry. That's her.
It's her link.
I kindly ask if you would read this below on my behalf during public participation. Sorry for the late notice. Sincerely, Nanette Karg, K-A-R-G. Dear Superintendent Gordon and board members, you may be aware of a recent news report of a school bus accident involving a school bus not equipped with seatbelts. Sadly, this story is not a new one. Please view. And then she attaches a link, which will attach also to the minutes. As a D41 parent, I'm expected to put my children in school buses without seatbelts or have my children miss out on field trips with their classmates and find alternative transportation to and from junior high school. Why, in any other vehicle except a school bus, it's illegal for any driver or passenger to not wear a seatbelt. In this day and age, it's inexcusable to allow children on school buses without safety restraints. It's a travesty that only 6 states in America currently require safety restraints on school buses, and Illinois is not one of them. How many Illinois children need to be injured or killed in a school bus accident before we demand these changes? We should not wait for our Illinois lawmakers to protect our children. My specific question for the board, has the board considered the specific safety bus concern? And if so, what, if anything, is being done to contract with school buses equipped with seatbelts in our district? Respectfully, Nanette Karg, D41 parent. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, I did not see that before the meeting, so thank you. Right. And we'll include that. Thank you.
Specialized buses, right. Sometimes, but not across the board. Yeah. Do you know any?
We typically put seatbelts in for preschool children, but not on the entire bus. Really difficult to monitor. I'm not saying that it's not a safety issue.
Right.
But I don't know any school buses that have all passengers.
Right. Thank you. All right. Let's see. Discussion items. Educational benefits, cooperative health insurance renewal.
All right. I was like, yeah.
So in January, we received pre-renewal information from Educational Benefits Cooperative, and that's the cooperative that our district belongs to for health insurance, for life insurance, and for dental insurance. So at the pre-renewal information was shared with Finance Committee and the Board back in February. Last week, they held their meeting where the final renewal numbers were shared with us, and so we have that to show to you this evening. So for, and this is for plan year beginning July 1st, 2016. So for the PPO, our PPO loss ratio came in at the end of the year at 96.5%, and the renewal rate was going to be 5.5% for District 41. As you may recall, we were projecting 7.7% as an increase for the PPO. Our preliminary loss ratio was 92.8, but the Educational Benefits Cooperative Board decided to use 1.5% of reserves to bring down the PPO rate increase. So the average increase for the cooperative is 5.5%, and we fell in the debt average band. For HMO, again, this is done separately from the PPO analysis, our final loss ratio was 94.2. Our preliminary loss ratio was 96.4, and that's going to result in a 0.7% increase for us. Our pre-renewal projection was a 5% increase. We are just slightly below or performed more poorly than the average band, which was showing a 0.3% decrease across the cooperative. And then the dental loss ratio for the district came in for the final renewal at 83.3%, resulting in an increase of 1.1% for next year. Preliminary renewal information was a 0.3% decrease with an 81.7% loss ratio. As I mentioned earlier, the PVC board decided to use some of the cash funds to bring down the rate. In terms of how this compares to trends, 6.5%, these are very strong and very positive renewal rates. Our next step as a district will be to hold open enrollment meetings in May with our employees to give them the opportunity to change plans, switch plans, and to provide information to them about the new rates, and then also work with Becky Allard in the finance department in terms of setting up a payroll system and information so that paychecks can be run appropriately starting July.
Board, questions?
I have a question. Okay. What was the increase for HMO?
For HMO, it's 0.7%.
0.7%. Okay.
0.7, not 7.
You know, and you give us all the pre-renewal projections, so that's my question is always, what was our, you know, total projection for this? So it sounds like we were when you showed us the bands on this, the information, it looks like we're thick within that middle point, like we're hitting where pretty much everybody else is.
We're in the middle band for every single private
HMO, right.
And if you look at that, the middle band is 93.7 to 100.1, and we were at 94.2.
Right.
Just right on the cusp.
Right.
And again, just a reminder that the pre-renewal pays claims from November 1st through October 31st, mm-hmm. and then they get a final full year claim in 2015.
And the money that the EBC decided to use, that 1.5% of working cash,
right.
That's just annually they see what the cooperative has to work with,
correct.
And then make that decision at the time.
They make a recommendation,
yep.
Right, and the district then vote on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you may have discussed this because I wasn't there, so I apologize. It's a repeat. So, you know, how does this impact us? Because I remember with the renegotiated contract with GIA, also there's stipulation in there that there would be an increase.
There would
benefits,
be
benefits, so are we paying? Is the district paying this increase?
I asked that.
Did you ask that? Sorry.
So, I think Lori explained at least what she understood it as. I mean, you know, obviously understanding as. But I think we have to go back and maybe find where the audio was, because I think you asked about it at a board meeting about a year ago. So, because Lori didn't quite remember, or I shouldn't say remember, didn't even know that it was what you're talking about, that it was part of the agreement. So I'll let her answer.
So,
yes.
Okay,
go ahead.
The extension of the contract with our teachers association kept our insurance split, so the percentage that the employee pays versus the percentage that the board pays the same. So, for example, if you have a premium of, $100, the employee pays a certain percent, and the board pays a certain percent. Premiums every year will either increase or decrease based on loss ratio. So we would not be able to lock that in or make any commitment to say that those rates would stay the same because we don't have control of those rates. We do have control of from the bargaining process is the split for the cost sharing.
So the split is what
would help the bank.
Yeah.
Do we have any influence on the rebate amount that they have?
How much they release from working cash?
Yeah.
There's a recommendation that is brought to all of the districts through their executive board. They're looking to keep their reserves at 15%, and so they. Anything that is above that they use for plan enhancements, meeting ways to programs to put in place to hopefully curb costs or promote wellness, or they sometimes bring that.
So what's So what's the I can talk to you offline, but I'm seeing $42 million in member equity, $82 million in cash and investment. It's a pretty cash-rich plan. So my question is, how as a organization, how as a cooperative, that they're coming up with just that small amount, that there's so much member equity in here, but maybe you and I could talk offline.
And I would need to probably consult with them to really answer your question. There are 90 school districts that are involved, yeah. So it's a pretty big group.
What was it last year, Lori, the working cash? Because we had bought...
We released some, I think they released some last year, I don't remember.
I felt like it was higher than 1.5%.
Oh, yeah, it was.
It was.
Working cash to help.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of what Patrick is saying. It kind of depends on what they're looking at as a total and then being able to bargain that back. And do they continue to look to bring other districts in? Because that also then... You know, divides. You know,
yes.
The risk.
Three more districts just joined.
Three new ones, yeah. Good.
I guess my question is they got $42 million in member equity, and I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And they may say that they're trying to hold 15% of reserves, and that's great because mm-hmm. it's $752,000 according to this financial statement.
Right.
But you have $42 million in member equity. To me, I think they have a little bit more working capital.
Yeah.
Maybe,
it's a good question to ask, yeah. So this will be coming back to us.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, this is just information. Yeah. My fault. Sorry, I didn't read it.
Yep.
Thank you. Alright, thanks, Lori.
Thanks, Lori. So, board policy revision. Board, just a reminder how we, the policy committee, has determined how we're going to get ourselves through all of these policies. We take each section at a time, and then we do a comprehensive review of that section while also taking in any other press recommendations that are really critical that may impact other sections. So what you're seeing in front of you tonight is that review. And what we found from this review is there are a number of older policies that needed revision through press. So you do see a lot more red lines than general.
Mm-hmm.
Generally in our recommendations to you. But that's the reason why some of these recommendations go back to 2006. So that's a lot of this work is just updating all press recommended. There are no staff or even... policy committee changes to it.
No.
Stephanie Dean?
Well, for those listening at home or in the audience, press is a service that we subscribe to that helps us keep our policies in line with state law. So when we say press recommendations, it's a service that says, here are changes in the state law, and here's what you need to reflect in your policy to make sure that you're consistent with the state law. And this time through, like you said, I don't believe we made any changes to the ones that are on here. We just adopted the press recommendations and making the changes to update it so it matches the current state laws.
Yeah, the only thing that we did do, there were some policies at the end of the student section.
That were redundant?
Oh, we deleted.
Yeah, yeah, you deleted
it. Yeah, thank you for pointing those out.
If you wanted to scroll through, it's policy 7. 301, 302, 303, 304, 303, 304.
It kind of it had to do with like
student government,
yeah,
responsive, yeah, activities. 303
was about student
building activities. Kind of that high school. Yeah. So a lot of them, we weren't 100% sure why they were in here, because they're not policies that press has.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like ones that we created, but we went through and made sure that everything that's in those is covered in other policies.
Good. Yeah, the only note I made to myself was around the AP, the rewritten on harassment of students and the building principal specific steps that they've added to this. And then I guess my question is that these would be a part of the emergency procedures or procedures that the principals would have and have to train on holistically, because these this is very specific additions to it. So, okay.
Paul, were there any? But were there any policies that we had to edit because we're deleting these?
No, we looked back and we did a cross-reference. Yeah, Nancy looked through and they were already done, cross-referenced, and everything that we were looking for. Any other questions?
No, thanks.
And then we'll bring these back April 11th for approval.
And we'll keep walking through these. You know, some of these were from 2006. So what Stephanie and I have been doing is taking a section and making sure we go through them, all the policies in that section, and start bringing them all up to date. So we just move section by section. We'll continue to do that.
It's a lot of work. Thank you for doing that.
All right. Next up is hardware device refresh. Mike, board members, you had a pretty lengthy board report part of that. So Mike will talk to you a little bit. He did this in finance a few weeks ago. So, Mike, you want to take us through your board report?
Sure. There are three separate device refresh recommendations as part of this, and starting with teacher devices. And currently we have desktop models in place in classrooms right now. Teachers do a lot of, there's a lot of mobility in our teachers' lives right now. So our recommendation is to refresh those desktops with laptops. Those desktops have been in service for about 5 years now. So the recommendation is for 350 laptops. We landed on the HP 400G3 series of laptops, which address a lot of the wants and needs of the teachers in the classroom, larger displays, keyboards, 10-key punch, integrated optical drives. These are the things that teachers use. That we need in the classroom. So the recommendation is for 350 of those units. The unit price is $716 for those devices, as well as 330 port replicators, and that is for them to be able to dock into all the AV equipment in their rooms, their smart boards, their projectors, document cameras, that sort of equipment. So it's a quick and easy integration for them as they move from classroom to classroom as they need to. The unit price for the port replicators is $107. The plan is to finance those over a three-year fair market value lease. The annual cost for the laptops will be $32,068. And for the port replicators, the annual cost will be $11,495. And again, that's over a three-year term. At the end of that term of the lease, those devices will go back to the leasing company to be refreshed again.
Mike, what did you say the annual cost was?
For the laptops, it is $32,068, and for the port replicators, it's $11,495. So that's for the teacher.
I don't have a calculator, but am I seeing this right in our report? Just say $81,000.
It's under the first recommendation on page 2.
I see the port replicator. Replicator at $11,495. And then I'm seeing the laptop number at annual $81,588.
This is page 2. It's right after option 1, 2, and then where it says recommendation, this is where he's reading from.
So I'm looking at the spreadsheet.
Oh, you're looking at the spreadsheet.
Yeah, it's got 350 times 716. 250,000 annual lease is $81,588. In your spreadsheet, Mike. I like the lower number better.
I'll go.
Okay. I don't know. Okay. I just want to make sure I remember the right thing.
The second recommendation is for desktops. We have the Phi Tech Lab at Hadley is due for refresh. There's 35 desktops currently in that lab. Since we were looking to refresh those desktops, we also looked at some of the other desktops in the district. For office staff, some of the special ed rooms still contain desktops for refresh. And the total number for those would be 120. The desktop model we landed on was the HP 800. The unit cost for those is $652, and the total cost would be $78,240. Those would be purchased on a 5-year lease. Those also would be a fair market value lease. Annual cost of that lease would be $16,997. And we would not replace any of the other peripherals. We'll continue to use the existing monitors and keyboards and mice. We just would be replacing the desktop unit itself. And then the third recommendation, which is the biggest, is our student devices. We've got 1,800 laptops coming off of lease, as well as 270 iPads that are currently being used in the classroom for student use. Those are mainly at the K-5 grade levels. And there was some interest in looking at two different models for that. My recommendation is a one-to-one from K through 5. But then there was a request also to look at basically replacing a 1-to-1, those 1,800 laptops instead of a 1-to-1. So that, the second option would provide for a 1-to-1 from 3rd grade through 5th, and the 1-to-1 would be from kindergarten through 5th. So what we looked at for replacements would be Chromebooks instead of the Windows-based laptops we've used in the past. Option 1, which would be the refresh or the 1-to-1 for 3rd grade through 5th, then in kindergarten there would be 10 Chromebooks per section, and at 1st and 2nd grade there would be 15. Chromebooks available for classroom use. The model we landed on was the Dell Chromebook 11. Unit cost for those, or I'm sorry, the right, the total would be 1,830 of those Dell Chromebooks, and the annual cost for the lease would be $197,660. The estimated annual, also with Google licenses involved. So the lease would be $307,741, and that is for the 1-to-1 from 3rd grade through 5th, plus providing pretty much an equal amount at kindergarten, 1st grade, and 2nd as we currently have in the facilities right now. The 1-to-1 option would
Mike, I'm sorry, what was the per cost of those Chromebook 11?
I believe those were $246.
It says
$246.25,
yeah.
I'm sorry, did you cover that?
Oh, so your $197 is the licensing, too, because you're
Correct. Correct.
Oh, okay.
Right.
All right.
Yep.
Okay.
And then the second option would be for a 1-to-1 from kindergarten through 5th grade. That would be 2,230 Dell Chromebook 11s with additional with Google licensing as well for each device. The total cost for that over the 3-year annual cost for that would be $343,000, $171,000, and that would also be on a 3-year fair market value lease, at the end of which we would return those Chromebooks back to the leasing company.
Hey, Mike. Mm-hmm. I think I found, you just transposed the number, but just so it's accurate for the board, the laptops for the teachers, I think, are $81,588.38. The $32,000 figure that you put in the report in your spreadsheet is for the Dell Chromebook 11 at Hadley.
I'm sorry.
So I think that's where you pulled that. You just pulled the wrong number.
You're right, because there's 400 Chromebooks that would also be assigned for Hadley, and I did split those out.
Yeah.
I apologize.
So, no, that's okay.
So those are the three recommendations. I wanted to provide you with two options for the Chromebooks for the student use for the discussion.
Well, one thing that I noticed, I went through the teacher comments, and being married to one, it didn't surprise me, I guess, but they were all over the board. I mean, you know, some liked iPads, some, I don't know that you could find consensus right on, which probably could give you, you know, gray hair, right? I mean, trying to figure all that out. So, but I did, I intentionally, and again, I'll say I did not ask my wife about this, so, but I did ask some other teachers at the lower levels, and it was interesting, at least what I seemed to hear from the ones that I talked to, they thought at the lower level that they were a little uncertain about the user how friendly it was to as a user of the Chromebook, you know, as opposed to the iPad. But then the iPad doesn't print, so there was, you know, they like to print things as they're teaching them how to write. So then you're back to then I was then so I tended to hear that the a laptop was more friendly, which I think is what they have now.
Correct, that's what they're using.
So I don't know. I wanted to get your thoughts on it, just because. I mean, do you think how? And I know you understand the system and the Chromebook and all that. Maybe not how a 5-year-old would use it, but do you think that it'd be okay to get them using those?
The biggest issue we would run into is the logon process, which is still an issue we have with the laptops. But with the Chromebooks, where our plan from kindergarten, first and second grade is students don't have their own individual logon. We have a class log, which they have right now. So when they log down to the laptop, they're just logging into that class login. So the teacher sees all their other work and has easy access to it, and students don't have to log in. So the plan would be those would always be logged into that teacher's account. All they really have to do is pull it out of the cart, open it up, and it would take them right to the desktop to maybe start to work. We're also just beginning to get involved with the Google apps for education. So we can more easily deploy those by group, by grade level. And that's something we, as we start to really involve ourselves with Google and the apps, we can start pushing those out and really exploring those in greater detail with Chromebooks. So,
and that may make it a little more user-friendly, too.
Right. It's easier for them to get in and log in. And also, when we're doing part testing, it works much more efficiently on a Chromebook than it does on an iPad.
Because I would agree with you. When we looked at those results at that lower level, and I'd ask Karen to weigh in here, some of the teachers really like the iPad, its use, and some like the Chromebooks across the board. Karen, were you seeing that same?
I think their greatest frustration with the iPad is it was really devised as an individual device. So trying to get access to the different apps, it's been tough. They find one they like, but it's not like your own personal one where you can quickly download it. It's just kind of a source of frustration. They like to be able to print. So I think they've started to gravitate more towards the use of the laptop.
And we'll still have iPads available for projects that can be checked out through the library. Also, we're seeing like the iPads were used, but mainly for projects. Not as much for day-to-day, but for some specific projects. So we would still have those, a collection of those available in the library that we can check out. And I would see those primarily used primarily.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you think that from a user friendliness to the little ones, if you think, you know, and like you said, as you expand maybe the apps and stuff like that,
at least, you know, judging from my experience with my youngest, he's been using a phone for since he was
they usually do.
Yeah, that makes sense. I had one other question. When I was looking at the spreadsheets, and I appreciate the work you put into this because I know there was a lot. When I was looking at maybe a 2-to-1 situation, at the first grade level. You were looking at 15 at first and second, 15 per section, 10 in kindergarten. I think our numbers are at 20 to 22 for those classrooms. So, were you thinking we'd need to order some extra ones just to hedge the bet, or?
Right, the numbers you see in are cutting pretty close to what our class size targets are with the sections. So the plan moving forward for spares is we have 430 Chromebooks going off lease this year, and those are the ones, the model you're using right now. By the time they hit the end of that fair market value lease, they're really not going to be worth much more than $50. So my plan was to identify maybe 50 to 70 of those devices and just purchase those outright. Probably cost the district about $5,000, and then we have that collection of Chromebooks to use as spares. And then each year as these come off lease, we would pull back a collection of those that we can use for spares. And then as they go down and we dispose of them. But we would at least have this built-in collection of spares without us having to go out and purchase brand new ones that would just be held in reserve for spares.
Okay. More cost effective.
Yeah. Very good.
And then the last question I had, I'm going to defer to Stephanie, because we actually talked about the dual language chart at Churchill, and as much as she tried to explain it to me and thought about how you were doing it, I couldn't wrap myself around it.
I guess he's turning to you now. What does that mean?
Well, it just seemed like we had a lot. We had an awful lot.
We were trying to figure out the numbers because there's like 50 more at Churchill than the total enrolled. So we were trying to figure out where that big discrepancy came from. And I think what it was is, I think what we figured out is per section, the amount you're allotting per section by grade is based off of the class-wise target highest.
Yeah.
And I think in the dual language programs, I think their targets are lower. I think even as we get to the higher grades, so maybe we want to adjust those, because I think that's where a lot of
the extra
were coming from. Does that make sense?
It does.
Correct. Yeah, that's
exactly. So I understood where your numbers come from, but I think that's why it ended up with so many was from that.
Because
their numbers aren't as high as the...
Right. Mm. But is that tied into, from what Mrs. McCluskey told us, that there is that number in order to accommodate move-ins in that program? So in fact, if I'm remembering that, I don't know that this is connected, but when you said that, it made me think that part of the reason that the numbers were lower is because of that space allocation. So if those get filled, then what does that do to usage?
And that's why I just based it off those class size stuff.
The overall.
I can definitely revisit that just to look at the exact number of students we have in those classrooms right now.
Because I think right now we're enrolling like 22 to allow. And I'm just wondering if we should be more...
A little more conservative about it.
It's not a ton, but if you're more conservative, if you see the enrollment bump up, then adjust.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think in the other classrooms...
Good feedback.
Mm-hmm. That's my understanding,
just a big discrepancy.
Right, that you have that gap because you want to make sure there's room to tweak it for enrollment. Yeah.
Well, I can definitely look at those specific numbers.
And Kurt kind of, I think, asked them all, but I noticed in looking at other districts and what they're doing, a lot of them do have the iPads at the younger grades. So I think you kind of already answered that, but just want to make sure before we make this investment, are we going to go back and say, oh, Chromebooks, or we'd rather have the iPads for the younger grades? Because I've actually heard, both from teachers. I've heard teachers say, I love the iPads. It's great. It's easy for fine motor, for little hands to use. But then I've heard other teachers say, no, they use iPads and stuff enough at home. Like, for what we need to do in school, the Chromebook's fine. So... I've heard both.
I think that's what the report said.
The trend for K through 2 is people are using iPads, so I didn't know.
And I heard the same from other districts where they've had iPads at those younger grade levels, and now they're starting to pull back and look at Chromebooks as replacements for those.
Mm-hmm.
Because? For a lot of the same reasons that we are. I think the difficulty of management, pushing out apps efficiently, as well as the cost, because an iPad is going to cost twice as much. Almost three times as much as a Chromebook. And then we would still have the iPads available that will allow us to evaluate this program for the next several years. And then we can always adjust at the end of that time period. We'll also have another 120 iPads coming up at least next year. So as we evaluate the efficiency of this program, we can also look at how we want to approach refreshing those moving forward. If we want to add more to that batch, or if we'd rather continue to put that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was also going to say, just like Chris said, I appreciate all the numbers and research you pulled together for us, because it definitely helps. I'm definitely more a fan of option one, which is to do 2-to-1 for K through 2 and then 3-to-1 for 3 through 8. That's what I'm leaning towards for a couple of reasons. I don't know, we should be discussing
this now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it would be good.
I've tried to kind of do my research. I looked at the teacher's notes here, and it seems like, one thing I did notice in the teacher's notes, there seems to be a little discrepancy in the amount of time teachers are using them. And I don't know if that'll change now that we're getting a new curriculum for next year. Maybe once we kind of get our groove, we'll figure out how much we tie technology into that. But based on the fact that it's kind of all over the board, it doesn't seem like, especially the younger grades, it's necessary and critical to what we're teaching our students. Because I see some teachers say less than half an hour a day. So I think that, and I've tried to talk around to other people who I know work in other schools of technology, and they said it seems like two to one is sufficient, and then 3 to 1 for the other grades. Looking around, I kind of asked around for 289 because they didn't report back. And I think the ROE, whoever gathered the report, they didn't have numbers in there for them. And I know that they are not 2 to 1 even at all their grades, but especially not their younger grades. So kind of looking at districts around us. I tried to look at our benchmark districts to see what they did, and a lot of them some of them weren't on this report, but 89 and 200, I kind of bounced around. So it doesn't seem like it's out of the norm to do the 2 to 1 for the younger grades. And I even question a little bit, I don't want to make a huge case out of it, but I still question third grade a little bit, especially since we were going to multi-age second and third grade together, and if we're okay with second graders having 2 to 1, would third really be any different? I even thought, well, we should pilot third grade at just one school, 1 to 1 Chromebooks, because are they using laptops right now in third grade, correct?
Mm-hmm.
2 to 1.
Yep.
Should we pilot it at one school, but would that cause issues versus the potential savings? I won't make a huge, I'll just make some suggestions. I don't know if anyone else would want to do that, but because there would be a little bit of a savings, just pilot it, see how it went. The only thing, with doing 2 to 1 at the younger grades and looking at the number per section, I was wondering, like, the class size target for kindergarten, for example, the max is 22, and I know we were allocated 10, but should we do, like, half of the, not none, mm-hmm. I'm actually advocating for more in that case, should we actually do half of the max class size target? To be conservative, okay, in those instances, because 22 is the max in kindergarten. You only give them 10; they don't have 11.
They don't have that.
Yeah. So.
So you're saying if they had 22 kids, there was 10 in there, and they're borrowing from another classroom, they're probably going to three, and they're going to two classrooms to borrow, right? Is that what you'd be a little short? If you were doing something where you wanted everybody in there to have it,
you'd go to
a teammate and get, but they'd only have 10, so you'd have to go to another.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Let me have Karen jump in here for just 2 seconds on the curriculum side of things that you asked around STEM scopes, the math, and I know we haven't made a decision on which math we're going down, but how does that impact technology?
Well, one of the trends that we see is that the actual device is really becoming the textbook. Now, granted, at the primary grades, you typically aren't going to have everybody, first grade, getting on and reading it independently and things like that. But the teachers will—they have the opportunity. There's kind of some reteaching. There's vocabulary, there's videos that the kids can access. So when they're not with the teacher, they can be working in different groups, kind of to further differentiate for them. I think from the teacher's perspective, they're using it more within kind of the writer's workshop. We still believe it's important for the kids to put pen to paper or pencil to paper as well. But we are starting to see, more and more. And even, as we move forward with a math, some had more technology one did than the other. But because they can further differentiate for kids and kind of get them kind of down their own, working on their own thing, sometimes it makes sense. And I know they have kind of a class login, but like with STEM scopes, the kids actually do have an individual login and their parents can access it as well, and the kids could access it from home. And the same would be true for math. For Odyssey, they have to kind of log in to their own. And, you know, we still talk to teachers about kind of that appropriate balance between what would be too much technology. We wouldn't want to put kids in front of a textbook all day. We wouldn't want to put them in front of mm-hmm. a laptop. So I do think, though, like when they have to borrow, because they plan together, a lot of times they're trying to do like the same units at the same time. So they're not always able to borrow from the same grade level peers. They've got to go to another grade level and get those and kind of coordinate that, mm-hmm. which I know from a teacher's perspective, I mean, that's kind of more of a management thing for them that makes it a little bit easier. But I think the biggest thing is we are seeing the trend that the device is now the new textbook. And the reason for that is updates are coming more regularly, and once you buy that actual textbook, it's obsolete within a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, and textbooks are going away on some level. I mean, at the certainly at the high school level, they're using ancillaries and that type of thing, but they're moving textbooks out. So, you know, it's not as, again, it's not as current, the material.
I see
what you're saying.
The older grades, I guess, for kindergarten through second grade, I don't see how that, I mean, that does bother. I mean, they're not really reading textbooks that those young grades, and I know watching videos and things like that, but the teachers have smartphones and things to show videos on. I guess I'm a little, you know, I know we talked about how the technology makes it easy for the teacher to differentiate, but, you know, should the teacher be able to differentiate with their lessons too? And I don't know. I just, for the younger grades, I don't see how technology one to one is going to make that difference versus two to one. I mean, the way we sounds like we're using it, it sounds based on how the teachers are using it. It seems like two to one would be sufficient. They can share them with their partner for if they need them for something. I don't know that the kids in kindergarten have to have access to a Chromebook on the ready. It just seems unnecessary.
So what is the genesis of bringing to the board two options?
I think it really came from the previous discussions around, you know, what does the board want to see. I don't think we had clear consensus on which way. Yeah, it came out of finance. Yeah. So this is very unusual. Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask this: what is the because we're not experts on teaching methods. We may have opinions, but we're not experts. And I want to be very careful about picking an option without knowing what it is that the teachers and the staff think is appropriate to match with their curriculum. And I'm wondering if there's an option in here that represents that, or if these are just financial options.
Well, obviously they're financial, as you see that, but do we think there's
a correct option?
Yeah,
that's what
we
I'm
do
looking
think
for.
The one-to-one,
okay,
based
so
off
that's
of
the
what
point
Karen
of
just said around instruction, access, those aspects. Yeah, instructionally, we believe option two, that one-to-one.
So the point of view of the staff then is to make it option two. Okay.
Well, I was, you know, Stephanie said this toward the end, and actually you picked up on this, but one of the notes I made to myself is when I was reviewing this and all the comments, I was trying to review it without my lens of what do I think they need versus what is it that we're reading in here. And I will say that the teachers that actually really made comments, the comments are all around around a theme where they talk about having to borrow, one-to-one technology would be extremely helpful in advancing technology implementation because there would be more options for whole class lessons. It was really about this idea of what I didn't hear them saying is, I want to use this so that we can have computers every single day, every hour of the day. It was, I can design lessons that are more holistic, knowing that I don't have to your point, Kurt, I have 10 in my classroom or 15 and go next door and borrow 4 over here because they have 3 students out who are sick and so they don't need them. But it's this It's this, you know, kind of balancing act. So my takeaway is that the message is that this one I thought was the best. This is a second grade teacher. This is not a good survey, as we don't have the accessibility for each student to use laptops at the same time. What I do now and what I could do if they all had the same, if they all had them, are two different things. You're comparing apples to oranges. So to me, that's some of the message of some of the other is we recognize in this the whole last three pages of what they're potentially using or currently using and potentially using, I think speaks to this the curriculum piece, which is if I have the tool, then I can more appropriately use it, and then I guess what I'm reading into this is it will be less about them using the tool. Because I have 10 and now I can have a small group work on something versus I have this tool and I can be teaching with it. And to me, that was the message that came out. This other one I thought was good too. It says, laptops provide an opportunity for our students to use and practice typing skills, but this will really help them when they enter the upper grades. They need to have a good solid start. And this is somebody who prefers the Chromebooks. The difference financially, correct, and if I'm wrong on this, is like $35,400, right?
Correct.
Between option one, which is 10, 15, 25, et cetera, and option two, which is to put it at one-to-one and then allow them to have that flexibility. It could be lowered. Okay. So so from a financial perspective, you know, the difference is a little over $35,000. The other thing I was thinking about is, you know, we have bubbles, you know, from year to year in terms of the number of children. And while we have class size targets where we, you know, target it, we do have ebb and flow in the classrooms as well and in class sizes. So I think actually, Kurt, you said this, and which I think is really smart, and that is if I'm a teacher and I've got 10 and I've got 22 kids or 23 kids and I'm trying to design something for the whole and then I've got to negotiate with my co-teacher or whomever, that just adds, to me, that adds planning time that we have the potential to just cut from them and just let them get into it and be appropriate in their use of the tool. Because it is a tool. That's all it is. It's a tool.
Eric, I just want to clarify. I'm okay with them walking across the hall and getting them what I think. That's why I asked Mike the question, how close, you know, can we get away with 13 or 15 or whatever? I don't know, but if he's mm-hmm. just being on the conservative side. But where it gets a little more complicated is if you have 10 in each classroom and there's 22. But if you have 15, they're only going to one of their classrooms. So I'm not saying that they're going to go, the way this is designed, they're not going to be walking in two different classrooms. They'll be walking across the hall to their counterpart. You know, and in the end, you know, I know we're told not to get involved in this, but, you know, people elect us here to give opinions on it. I don't think that our K through second graders, with it, it's a $35,000 savings, but I don't know that we need to have them with one-to-one devices in their classroom. I'm not sure if they're using them a lot, then, you know, then we don't have to have teachers. We just buy them in and they can sit on a laptop and they
we're not saying that.
Do that. Well, that's my point. That. But my point is if they're using a lot, then that's the case. If they're not using them that much or they're using them kind of on an intermediate basis, well, then we can borrow a few from across the hall. So mm-hmm. for me, if they're using a lot, we can save a lot of money in salary and just them come and we'll put them in front of this. Or if they're using it less than that, then I think that they can get away with walking across the hall and grabbing 10 from the partner. So.
Patrick or Drew?
Yeah, I guess I'm
no,
just
okay. Just discussing.
Yeah, I guess I'm still on the fence with this because I did look at Mike. I was reading your emails on the documents and with the first and second graders, the reviews that you did, and it's, you know, 60 minutes, an hour, less than an hour, and you know, I was reading them again as we were talking, and I guess I'm just on the fence is you know, those first and second graders and kindergartners, like, will they build a program for all laptops, or are they comfortable with just using, I'll only use this for 40 or 60 minutes a day. So I don't know our end yet on this because I just don't know
if the utility of one-to-one is matching the 1 hour or sicker, you know, 90 minutes that I use a day.
Mm-hmm. Can I get to clarify that? Because that's good, Patrick. That when they responded to this, they were responding to how they're currently using what devices they have, which is not one-to-one.
Correct.
Yeah, so the response was, that's what I was trying to discern when I was reading through all the comments, that the discernment is around, that was that one teacher's comment. You're asking me to do this, apples to oranges. I don't have devices, so I can't tell you how I might do whole class learning or use STEM scopes in this way, because I don't have the access to it. But,
yeah.
So I think that's part
of
it.
Yeah.
Well, couldn't we, we haven't used Chromebooks in K-2 yet, and we're adopting new curriculums for next year. I mean, wouldn't it make more sense? I mean, if you're looking at it just from a financial standpoint, I know it's not hundreds of thousands of dollars, but it is money. Wouldn't it make more sense to just pilot the Chromebooks 2-to-1, have a new curriculum, see how things go, see how they're using them with what they're working with, using a Chromebook since they haven't even had a Chromebook. They've been using kind of iPads or maybe some use iPads, some use laptops, and see how they're using it, get some feedback after this year to reevaluate the 2-to-1. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know, you know, I guess I feel like I'm being questioned for questioning it, but I think...
No, not at all. I think we're all trying to discern what we're reading in this, and that's part of the messages. I'm not sure how I might use these, because in fact I haven't had the access to it. So that was part of the takeaway.
Can you pilot it just pilot having Chromebooks in those grades, mm-hmm. see how they use them to determine what the usage is? I mean, because I'm just going to be honest. I mean, I hear feedback from parents who have students in fourth and fifth grade with concerns that their kids, especially if their kids know what's going on in the classroom, they're stuck on a computer all day to we call it self-direct their learning. I don't know that really a fourth or fifth grader, especially one of my kids, would self-direct their learning, or they're going to goof around a little bit. But I get a little bit concerned if we have one-to-one technology in those grades and it's very easy to differentiate self-direct your learning, have the kids get on a computer. I'm concerned that to see that, to have that same effect in the younger grades, just because mm-hmm. If it's there, you can use it. But is that really how we want to be teaching, you know, our youngest kids in the district? I mean, I think there's something to be said for, you know, kindergartners and first graders and hands-on learning and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And the more we switch to technology, are we getting away from some of that? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'll just be honest, that's just my kind of opinion on it. And that's just feedback I hear from a lot of parents. I mean,
I think that's the bottom line, is the concern if it's too much. Right, which I think our teachers know.
Why don't we give every kid in our district a laptop and they can all be homeschooled and we can dial in? And there's that much of a concern about how much time our kids spend on computers. So I think that we just need to be mindful of that. And these are our youngest kids, developing kids. I mean, some are coming in never having had preschool. And
well, I didn't read in any of the comments that the teachers are saying, let's slap them on a computer. I know you didn't see that either.
I don't think teachers have that.
Yeah. I don't think that's their intention.
That's their intent. I'm just saying if it's there and it's easily accessible, I think you might use it differently if you had it in the classroom 1-to-1 than if it's 2-to-1 and you kind of have to plan and not...
Yeah. It could be. It sounds like the takeaway is it could be either way. It could be a good thing because it's whole class lessons. It's better planning because you know you have access to all of it. It could be the flip of that. You're right. So it's really the teachers. I mean, they're really the users of this. So we've gotten this feedback. They're going to hear this conversation if they're watching this, or Karen certainly at the next curriculum meetings be able to give that feedback. Maybe that's the question is, would they pilot it, or would it be another year of, well, I can't really pilot it because I don't have the whole. You know, I don't want to waste that year either.
Well, and I'm saying pilot having a Chromebook and using that technology mm-hmm. with our curriculum. That's when I say pilot.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Obviously.
Yeah.
Drew,
do you have a comment?
Oh, sorry. No, I'm sorry. Did you have something?
Well, yeah, if I could, and we could look at the apples to oranges side of it the other way, too. There's, you know, if I saw, and I'm not teacher, but if I saw vision and hey, this is what we could do coming throughout this. I didn't see a lot of it. I didn't see a lot of, boy, if I could have these, this is what I could do in my classroom. So when they say, well, I don't really know what it would be like, to me, that's, you know, that's not really, she or he's not really quite sure what they would do anyway. So for me, it can't really be something that they're dying to get anyway. So that's kind of how I look at that. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Jim, any comments?
You know, I'm looking at the two different options, option one and option two. And I guess I'm not seeing a pervasive reason to do the one-to-one. I don't see like an overwhelming need for that. And maybe I'm missing that, but it seems like to go to the one-to-one, I don't know that that's, I don't know that there's a need for it, and I don't know that if it's truly proven that this is what this need is satisfied. But I'm kind of on the fence.
Okay.
So next steps for this are?
That we will be bringing back.
I'm just trying to get the back of this.
I don't know if it goes to another round of discussion. I don't know if we, I mean, we've got some piloting ideas. We've got.
I'm
just not sure what to go with it. Okay.
The thing I just threw out there.
Okay.
Yeah. But forget that. I mean, I think these are
so
options.
Well, you could probably bring it back. Just see what everybody thinks.
Just go for the vote.
It probably gives Patrick and Drew some time, and if they have questions, they can email again.
So go back for one more discussion?
No, I think just next time, you know, if they had anything still, they could probably, you know, email and.
Yeah, if we have questions in between, and at our next meeting, we bring it up for votes.
Okay.
When's the next meeting?
April 11th.
Mm-hmm. 21 on the 4th.
Right
now,
is that
Thursday?
We actually,
I mean,
the whole
meeting is
on technology.
I promise
I'll
make this one.
You won't be in Europe. All right. Well, we'll bring this back then.
Who's sorry?
No, that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, and any other I would offer if teachers are watching or there's any other feedback, certainly welcome to send it to the board. All right, so back on the 11th.
Next one up are the revised class size target recommendation. Lori, you want to walk us through quickly?
Sure. Basically, what I did is took the levels off of the recommendation. And was pretty much asking for board direction moving forward from that standpoint. I know there was a request to bring it back. I wasn't quite sure what the feeling of the board was in terms of adjusting class size targets, so I'm bringing it back with levels off of it and hopefully listening to your discussion. Mm-hmm.
We really feel like these are good targets for each grade level. Based off of history, based off of what we know around the research on it, and looking at other districts around, pretty comparable for classroom targets. But board members, thoughts?
Oh, I'm just thinking at the LEN meeting, I was talking to a board member from 204, Naperville 204, and she was saying this. You know, we have this coming up. I said, yeah, we're talking about it too. She said to me that their fourth grade, their max is 31 students in fourth grade. Now, it's a huge district. I mean, lots and lots of schools, and I get all that. But I just, it brought me back to, you know, where we look to target and stay certainly below that. I know in your staffing models, Lori, you have given us the dashboard of the yellow, red, green. So that's just, it's a good eyesight to see that we really are working hard to maintain around our class sizes. So, you know, we have outliers out there, certainly, in bigger districts, but... Yeah, I mean, I assumed that this was coming just because you adjusted the grade level piece. Everything else is the same. And including academic performance or AM/PM kindergarten sections, mm-hmm. all that stays the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other board members, thoughts?
31, it would help our facility space issue.
31 in kindergarten?
Don't go there.
Well, I know I was the one that brought this up because before we implemented multi-age is when we changed it, and second grade used to be the same as K-1. So for everyone out there, K-1 used to be 20 to 22 students.
Mm-hmm.
I guess was grade 3 by itself at 22 to 25.
That was 23 to 25.
Grade 3, 25 to 25, and then 4-5, 25 to 27. So it was changed with the multi-age model, and I know the question was asked at that time, if we don't continue with multi-age, would we look at going back? And so I just remembered that, and so that's kind of why I brought it up. I don't know. The interesting thing to me is in looking at our enrollment report, I feel like, regardless of our targets, I feel like we've kind of settled in to four sections per grade. Like in our kindergarten, it's a really high enrollment. I don't know that it's kind of enough to add another section or not, but I don't know, are our class size targets adjusting things, or are we kind of settled into four sections and we're going to be just run really high in kindergarten, first grade, run kind of more mid in then third, fourth, fifth, regardless of what the targets are. And I don't know. I'm not the expert on class size targets. I just know before when it was evaluated, it came out that K through 2 was all the same, and it was only changed for multi-age. So mm-hmm. I'm just curious why now we're saying second should align with third versus K-1.
Feeling like the 22 to 25 is a good number for those two grade levels, similar grade levels.
When we've gone, Lori, in the past, I'm trying to think of, there was one year where I remember it was at Forest Glen, and literally 2 weeks before school started, we had to hire a teacher and open up another section, which, because it was three students above, it was too much. Then it ended up having three classrooms that were kind of just below target, like it was, I think, 22, it was in second grade. And the other ones had like 16. So when we make, my point is when we make that decision, we really, it's a big commitment because you're hiring and you're adding that section to it.
Well, this is the time of year when we're checking the
right.
I sent you, the updated yellow green sheet based on the February enrollment. As soon as the March final enrollment comes through, I'll update it again. And then as soon as our, and just a reminder, the kindergarten projections in there are based on this year's kindergartners, not our true kindergartners yet, because we're going through the registration process. So mm-hmm. as soon as we start getting the registration numbers in, those numbers will become more solid in kindergarten than they are right now. For 15-16, our kindergarten class size targets were above the target in several of the sections. But each time we add or we consider adding, we take a look at that second sheet within your packet mm-hmm. that I sent you. Take a look to see what it does across the district.
Right.
So we're looking to see if we add a section at one grade, at one particular school, does it totally set them out as an outlier compared to the others? We're looking to see if it's above that two above before we have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We're checking to see if we have space within the building and making sure that we can put the kids in. But this is the time of year when we may be coming back. We've built four positions into the budget, working with Becky Allard. In the event that our class has the registrations come in, in the Gen Ed setting,
K-5. Is there any science or studies or anything that support 22 versus 24 versus 20? Because the things I've seen in the past seem to be around 15 or 16 seem to make a difference, and maybe over 30 something make a difference.
Last I checked, I haven't typically
these really don't make a difference. At least they don't make a difference based on any recent study analysis. They would say, well, 22 is better than 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one or two children.
And I guess kind of the way I'm looking at it is, if you look at K-1 based on the target, at three of our schools, they're in the red, meaning above mm-hmm. above the target. And so really what that means to us is we're going to add a section, which we didn't for any of them, and need to add a section. If you were to add a section to any of these, I think then all of the classes would be below target.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so we looked at getting support in those classrooms, which is what
our new language.
The new language mm-hmm. in the policy says. So really, if we're not necessarily even going to add a section, changing the targets for grade two, all it's really doing is, in my mind, because grade two right now is in green for the most part. If you change that number, they're going to go in the red too. Do we need to look at, for grade two, if we're above that target, do they need support? And is it 22 kids in second grade or is it 25? Does it make sense like that? Because I don't know.
Well, it's dependent on the classroom, too. It's dependent on the teacher, and I know we talked about this before. It really is, you might be able to handle the 25 and say it's not a big deal, but Patrick might be drowning, you know, just...
Patrick would definitely be drowning.
Sorry, Patrick, I didn't mean to pick on you like that.
Well,
what are
their...
And Stephanie, we do add, I mean, this is not finished. This right. is still a work in progress, and it's fluid. We monitor, again, on a monthly basis at this time of the school year, and definitely more frequently over the summer when most people,
right.
you know, will transfer. And we and especially those couple of days and weeks leading up to the start of school, that's when we tend to kind of make sure that we've got our staffing correct, because you don't want to lose kids once classroom
right.
or once the school year has started.
Couple of Chromebooks are good.
Is that, I mean, like, do you think, I mean, in comparative districts, so there's, is their second grade class size target bigger than K-1? Is that the norm?
I don't know. I can find out, but I haven't studied. I haven't pulled that information.
From that K, mm-hmm. yeah, to the K-1 to the 2-3 mm-hmm. is what you're saying?
I mean, I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like, no. Do they bundle the K-1
right.
2 together? Mm-hmm. It's something
the
we can look
I
at.
See it as, I mean, I see it more as. Are you looking at second grade a little different? And if our numbers do creep up a little bit, but not enough to add a section, but at what point mm-hmm. do you say, okay, we need to maybe get support in our second mm-hmm. grade classrooms because they're too big? In my mind, that's kind
that's
of more
that
what
would be your discussion
this
with
is doing. Because it doesn't look like we're having a huge pop that we would add.
Okay. Other board member? But that's something we can bring back is in what are other districts doing? What's that bundle? What's their packaging? Is it K-1 or is it 2-3 like we currently have?
What do you need from us?
This is just discussion tonight.
Okay.
Just discussion. It just gives us some feedback like this to bring back other data.
Because we're staffing right now based on the approved targets,
yep.
and if there are amended targets, then we'll adjust our staff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So they're pretty important.
But, like you said, this is completely fluid. In another 30 days, with registrations, kindergarten, all that, it could change again.
But this can't be fluid.
Yeah.
This has to be solid. Or
the current numbers are fluid.
Oh, yeah.
I could suggest if we can maybe just look at like our benchmark districts
mm-hmm. and look at what they're.
See what theirs are and send it to us. And I guess if
yep.
we feel it's worth another discussion, let you know. And if mm-hmm. we're okay with it, I don't know. Do we have to
go
to the
loop? Just that fourth grade class. Target.
It is.
I was surprised. So, and we have kind of a lower elementary and an upper elementary, right? So our lower elementaries are K-1, 2-3. Upper elementary is 4-5.
We have K-1, 2-3.
Right. And I'm just thinking in a building, as I, you know, when I talk to teachers, like how they view their building. It's like 4-5 is that kind of upper elementary. It's preparation to start to transition. Those kind of things. And then K-3 is that lower elementary, you know, a little bit different mindset. Yeah. And 1 foot on the other, yeah. So.
Patrick,
all right.
Drew, any other feedback for us? We're going to bring back some surrounding districts, just in the feeder districts, and then how do they chunk their classrooms? Thanks, Lori.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. Chunk.
Technical term. Bundle.
Yeah, technical term. Chunk.
Wasn't getting either one.
All right. Consent agenda. I just want to note that the personnel report was not included on the consent agenda, so it's not on here. And we have a blue update at our desk for this. Are there any items board members would like to be removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Okay, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes the following. Item 1, finance, facilities, and operations. the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, the summary of bills and payroll, vandalism report, disposal of surplus property, the 2015-2016 FOIA report, school district payment orders dated March 3, 2016 through March 16, 2016, and item two, other matters, the approval of board meeting minutes from March 7, 2016, regular meeting minutes, and March 7, 2016, closed session minutes.
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Alder?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski? Excuse me. Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Under superintendent recommendations, the personnel report.
Yeah.
The blue copy. All right. I have a motion to approve the personnel report, which included employment recommendations and resignations as presented.
Motion.
Second.
Okay. Discussion. This includes the personnel recommendation for our assistant principal at Churchill, who is replacing Stacey Onak, who is retiring. So I know that that was included in it.
Did the first principal and part of the interview process?
For the, was Mary part of any part of the, no, I'm getting a head shake back here. No. Churchill. That was.
It was Churchill. Yeah.
You threw us all there for that question.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry, Patrick. Yeah. Nope, she wouldn't have been. I'm sure Mary, you would have been happy.
She wasn't happy.
Trouble paying attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Scott, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You want to talk a little bit about the process?
I'd be happy to. We had we posted the position in February, and it was following Stacy's notice of resignation retirement at the end of the school year. We had over 130 applicants for the position. We've screened all the online applications. NHR call it on paper. It's really not on paper anymore. It's electronically. Right. We brought in 28 people for screening interviews with Mr. Kleska and me. From that, we selected six to bring forward to a team. The team of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, nine people included. That includes Mr. Kleska and myself, and including a parent. Interviewed the six, what we call team interview candidates. We brought it down to two finalists who met with Mrs. Gallo, Mr. Klespitz, and me, and then making our final recommendation. And our final recommendation is for Melissa Groot. She's also known as Melissa Losey. She was just recently married, who works in Morris School District as the Director of Special Populations. She has an amazing experience in terms of special education. Her responses to our questions related to that were extremely strong and was supported by everyone.
Great.
Okay.
Her background's impressive.
Thank you, Lori.
I just had a couple of comments. Then I'm going to go ahead and pull a staff recommendation. But there were a couple things for me that were interesting, and I'm not picking on her. But we know that the assistant principals, like the principals, evaluate half the teachers in the building. Right? Right. So they break them down. It was interesting to me that this particular person had 4 years of teaching experience, I think, if I read it correctly. And those 4 years of teaching experience were in high school. So, you know, one of my concerns lately is that we have, I believe, a lot of people within our elementary schools who do not have elementary backgrounds. And so I think that that's important when we're putting people in our elementary schools to evaluate teachers. You know, for me, I'd like to see more than 4 years of experience. And again, I'd agree with the special ed portion on the other side of it, because they are evaluating our teachers, and I'd like to see them with elementary experience rather than high school experience. So those are just my thoughts on it. But again, I'll go to staff recommendation.
Thank you. One comment I was going to make on it just for the assistant principal. I think it's great that we're getting someone with special ed experience. The one thing I started thinking about is I know in the APs that we've hired over the years, we've hired a couple. We're bringing people in from the outside, and I think a lot of that is because we do need the people with that experience because they are so integral to the IEP process and special ed. So it's important. It's an important piece to have. And wondering if we need to start looking to it, you know, for staff development within our district. If we have staff members looking to kind of move up and get into you know, administrative roles, try to figure out how to fill in that piece of the puzzle, because it seems like that's mm-hmm. something that, you know, maybe we're not having with be able mm-hmm. to promote from within, because that's mm-hmm. a particular thing. I don't know how you do that. It was just the thought,
thought
I had, not any.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I know that goes through PDT too, and there's questions around professional development for staff in other areas.
Or that mentoring.
Or, yeah, so. That mentoring piece, yeah. It's good. Thank you very much.
The school that she's coming from, is it as diverse as Churchill?
Even more.
Okay.
This Morris? Yeah. Good. All right. Thank you very much. Roll call. Sorry.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Miller?
Yes. Okay, appoint school district treasurer. Section 8.1 of the Illinois School Code requires that the Board of Education appoint a school district treasurer. Section 8.2 requires that the school treasurer be properly bonded with a bond penalty of 25% of all bonds, mortgages, monies, and effects of which the treasurer has custody at any one time during the school year. The treasurer must be appointed each year and file a bond with the Regional Office of Education in order to receive state funds and the proceeds of the tax levy. Incoming Assistant Superintendent Cheryl Whittem is being appointed the school district treasurer, replacing the district's interim treasurer, Superintendent Paul Gordon. May I have a motion to approve the administration recommendation to adopt the resolution to appoint Cheryl Whittem to the position of school district treasurer for the period beginning May 1, 2016 and ending June 30, 2017, and to authorize the filing of the notice of school treasurer and treasurer's bond for the same period with the Regional Office of Education as required by school code. The cost of said bond is $4,500.
Motion.
Second.
Okay, discussion.
So just as a reminder, this was transferred to me for on a temporary basis.
Right.
And then, again, we're transferring it back to its rightful owner of the CSBO.
Becky, is it normal? I mean, are most districts set up this way where the finance person is the president? Mm-hmm.
I have been in every district.
And that has to do with, again, the money that your, the tax levy, the money that flows through your department.
Except in Cook County, where they have township treasurers.
Yeah. Thank you, Becky. All right. Roll call.
Mr. Olive?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mrs. Miller?
Yes. Item 3, 2016-2017 student fees. Annually, the administration reviews student fees for the coming year. During the discussion phase, the board has expressed an interest in changing the structure of both the basic and activity fees. Administration has presented a recommendation which includes basic and activity fees, with the understanding amendments are forthcoming, which we have at our table here. It's on the right sheet. Mm-hmm. Everybody should have a copy of that. In order to begin the board's discussion and direction, I first need a motion to approve the 2016-2017 student fees as presented. Need a motion in order to initiate this discussion around other options. Okay. I'll second. Okay. Mr. Buckfield, second. Mr. Ellis, motion. Okay, discussion.
Okay, so what you have in front of you currently is the administration's recommendation for the continuation of the fees based off of what is occurring within the state. Recent word around there's a potential for not to have a state budget for next year as well. So just putting all those pieces together and making sure that we're looking at long-term financial success for the district. Administration continues to move forward with this recommendation. However, as Erica pointed out, I know there was a lot of conversation about different options. So we have those for you here. There's three different options with wording as we saw it, as we remembered from the previous meeting. So there's this, and then there are these other options. Based off of what we heard and what we said, we'd bring back to you.
Yes.
I'd like to make a motion that we extend this until the next meeting for a couple reasons. One, Paul should, Joe should really be here for this for this meeting. I think the with going on with transportation and with going on with school funding, I think it would give us more time to be able to vet those pieces. So I would make the recommendation that we would table this until the next meeting.
May I ask a point of clarification?
Yeah,
Which is, what does that do in terms of the deadline for registration?
It slows everything down. I mean, that's all it does. It slows it down. It continues to have our parents wait to, you know, are we charging fees or are we not charging fees? But at the end of the day, that's what it's doing. It's not inhibiting anybody funds or anything. No.
Is it holding back mailings? Is it?
No.
That's really what I'm asking. Is
no. It's just the communication.
Okay.
It's probably that's the biggest thing is the timeliness of our communication and when we put the pieces within the registration.
Drew, I appreciate your comments about Joe, but you know, when board members are gone, we still have to function as a team. And I think Joe has made his comments, and you know, sometimes there's, you know, Joe would add to the conversation, but I don't think just because one board member is gone that we should delay a vote. That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, your second, your concern could be discussed, but for me, I think if one board member's vote, we all have the opportunity or conflict that may arise or may not be here. And I hope that doesn't, if I'm gone, I hope that doesn't stop the board from doing their business. So I'd have to respectfully disagree with that.
I would echo a little bit of what Patrick said about meeting Joe here, but I am very worried. I've made myself known on this already. I'm worried about the news we just got about transportation in the last week. And I'm also worried about the information that you just shared about blend and the fact that we could not have budgets next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't mind thinking about this a little longer if we could wait one more meeting to be able to go through it. I'd be okay with that.
If we go one more meeting, can we have an ask and answer? I mean, what is the ask? And what do we need to have answered? Because I think we've asked several questions over the last 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we have any, I don't know. I don't know if there's needle mover conversations that are going to happen in the next 2 weeks. I'd like to hear what you guys
I think the only needle mover would be the transportation. Because I don't think we're going to get any clarity from the state anytime soon.
The
transportation would be
that could roll out another month and a half, right? If to finance, we talked about potentially going out for a bid.
I think it,
bids,
yeah, I think with transportation, as Becky just alluded to, we're going to need to know by May 1st, and quite honestly, much before then. I think the transportation is going to flush itself out with the direction finance committee gave to us. In the next 2 to 3 weeks, by the time we come back April 11th, I think we'll have a good understanding of where we're going to be at. Are we going to stay within the co-op, or are we going to go out and bid by ourselves at that point? And I think you will know the financial implications of either of those decisions at that time.
And
so that's the only one to know, but I do not believe we'll know anything from the state.
So that transportation conversation could potentially impact your guys' decision on fees or no fees, or
my position has been since I got on the board, and it's evolved into wanting to get rid of the fees.
Yeah.
However, knowing that now we're going to face this increase in transportation, and it just happens to be about the same size, I think, as these fees, and the fact that the budget is where it is, I could delay it another year before I vote to get rid of fees, which is what I really like to do. It's just that I don't know that it's a good idea to vote on that based on all this information that we're getting.
And I don't want to paint you in a corner, but so...
So that's where I'd be now. I'd vote to keep fees at this point.
Rather than just table it. Or
right. If we can't get through the next 2 weeks, I get that. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then at this point, I feel that I would have to vote, and this is hard for me, but I have to vote to keep the fees because there's just too many things we don't know about for next year that I feel might be irresponsible to vote to get rid of them.
Okay. Other board members?
Well, I, you know, echoing Patrick in terms of what's the ask. You know, we've had a lot of conversation around this. We have a lot of data. I even pulled District 200s, which was not one of the benchmark districts, and, you know, they're matching and above our fees the way they are, especially the participation in sports. We're at the middle school level. They charge $125 per sport. So, so 200 is way above where we are on this, so we're not an outlier in that. And if the ask is to have more information, I think we have the information we have to do it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know what other information I would bring forward.
We think we might have an answer on transportation by the 11th meeting. Would it make sense to delay this till then, to at least have that? I think that's the only ask.
So you're saying, just to clarify, by April 11th, would we have an answer?
I don't know if we'd have a definite answer.
I think we'd have a sense of where we're at.
But you think you'd have it pretty much flushed out at that point?
Yeah. Everything could change based off of what another district does because we're in this co-op together. So right. If one district pulls out, then we're all back to the table.
Right.
Finance committee asks us to look at something and really pushing for a student to accept the bids as is and including the performance bond within them.
Yeah.
Kurt and Patrick brought up some really good points around that performance bond and how important it is and that we should continue to push hard for it. We would know that, I think, fairly. We would know that piece. So, yes.
If that's a piece we're going to know, I think that makes a big difference. If they're not going to accept that, then I think it's kind of more looking like there is going to be an increase.
I think either way, you're going to have an increase. How much is it?
Right.
How much is it? I mean, we're looking at
5%
the first year from our current transportation to currently bidded first student, which would then go up another 3% for a total of 8% overall. But would it go up more or less based off of what the finance committee wants us to push a little bit on?
You mean the higher amount or a little less than the higher amount?
It could push it one way or the other, because we're asking them to accept the bids as is without the performance bond, and to say that your bid to us is your bid, no matter if 15 joins us or not.
So that's the other caveat, is regardless of what these other districts do, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
But I guess the question, we knew, it sounds like we would know quickly, if they're going to accept our bid as is, if the rest of the co-op doesn't agree to them. So would that help you in making your decision if you knew that? If they don't, then it's still unknown. But if you knew that for sure, would that...
Well, that's what I was hoping for. And that's why I thought Drew had a good idea to see if we could wait until that meeting to might know more information. Because, again, my desire would be to get rid of all the fees, but I think to do that when we're looking at almost the same equivalent in our transportation doesn't seem like a great idea right now.
Okay.
So. Student fees, though, don't pay for transportation. So, they're kind of a separate deal. I mean, it goes back to my point that the student fees then become a revenue source that's kind of going around the tax cap. We're starting to think in terms of, well, maybe this offsets the bus increase. I'm okay with it. I think it makes sense if we have board members a little uneasy to let them have time to see how that goes, because we did give Paul some direction on what to do and how to go back with them. Mm-hmm. So I actually think I'd be surprised if we're not successful.
Just trying to get clarity on. Okay. I think we have to vote.
Yeah, we have to. Right.
Yes.
Yes.
I think we need a second.
Yeah.
I second.
Yeah, Dean seconded.
Okay. Then we can vote on that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're voting.
There is really no discussion.
No.
Right. Yeah.
That's a motion to table.
Right.
Yeah.
you ready to vote?
Yes.
Okay.
And we're voting on?
You're voting on to table it until April 11th.
Right, just clarifying.
No, I think it's good.
Just want to make sure.
Mr. Escalante?
No.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elter?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
No. Okay. Thank you. And we're done with that, right?
Yeah, we are
no
done. So with this, we'll come back April 11th.
Okay. 4/11. Thank you. Okay. All right. Items for consideration for future agenda from the board.
Yes.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Facilities committee is coming next month.
Well,
the 25th
April.
Of April.
For the finance committee, the second April 25th is what we're looking for.
April 25th.
Yeah.
Yeah. April 25th.
So did that get extended again?
Yeah, we were.
They
added two more meetings.
Added two meetings. Yeah.
We were maybe a little too optimistic.
We were unsure of the busing situation.
Yes.
One no more talk time.
Other.
What they said. All right. Under other. Any other?
Can I give one that I apologize I meant to do in the superintendent report? This would be very, very brief. PTA did not present last time or this time, but they did send us a report that we will attach to our minutes, just so everybody knows.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Sure,
thank
you, Pat.
I know. That's me.
Items for future agenda. I think we've wanted to have more items for future agenda. I know you and I have talked about it, but I guess I don't know where we're off, where we are with it. I know Paul's update had in there talking about specialization and addressing how we're going to handle an odd number of sections. And I know I had asked for the board to discuss it, not from the standpoint of what's the solution, but since it's part of specialization, which is a board directive, and is the board going to make any, directives as far as if we want, how we're going to handle this or not? Because I think where it is right now, it's at a building level decision, not a district level decision. And I had asked if the board wanted to discuss that, because I guess specialization is a district level decision. But we're letting the implementation of it vary by building. And there were some comments in the survey, both from the staff and the parents, about an odd number of sections and the inconsistencies, not just odd number of sections, but inconsistencies in the schools with specialization. One of them being some of our schools keep our second and third graders together all day long. They have two different teachers, but the kids travel together, but that's not happening in all of our schools. So we handled that differently. I think that was my understanding, is that was created because they felt socially and emotionally for the kids, it was better to keep them with their peer group. For second graders would go to a literacy teacher in the morning and math teacher in the afternoon together. But other schools, we don't do that. They switch the kids around. So that's the concern that's been brought up with how we're handling specialization in that regard. And then the other is how we're handling an odd number of sections. And there were quite a few comments in the staff survey.
Do we want it on the agenda?
Yeah, while you're grabbing that, just for clarity, Stephanie had asked at the last board meeting to have us discuss for the agenda teacher specialization. So when I talked to Paul about it, he's in the midst of looking at the teacher specialization, the baseline, which is to do it as with fidelity, you would call it the way it was laid out to do, and then is discussing with building principals and with teachers what to do if you have an odd number of sections. And it would include also what you're talking about, Stephanie. So the question that Paul gave to me when we were talking about the agenda was, is this a cart before the horse? Because we're talking about this, and I'm going to be bringing an update to the board to say, here's how we're looking at it, and then be able to have the board give some feedback on it. So that's where we are. And And actually, Paul, in his update today, also talked about when he was coming out of the conversations in the buildings, that was one of the bullet points at the top, is this discussion. So I don't want to speak for you, Paul, but is that accurate?
That's accurate.
Where you are?
I think the other piece for the board would be to say, do you want to add more teachers? I think that would be a board decision. I think the teacher specialization, how it's implemented within the schools, I think that's an administrative aspect to ensuring that we have that consistency across our district. So if it goes to the board, would make the decision to say, do we want to add more teachers to offset that odd section? So you would dramatically lower the class size targets. I think that would that's a board decision. Mm-hmm. That's not my decision. That's yours. So if you want to have that conversation, I think that's definitely a board conversation.
Yep.
I think how we implement it on a day-to-day basis, we're going to bring that back to you guys, saying this is that how we're going to work with our odd sections that we are going to have, that we're going to have every year.
Mm-hmm.
But that we have a consistent piece to it.
But it'll be consistent across the district.
Yes.
And that's what he said to me. I think that's the cart before the horse piece, so, which is what your point.
But in our defense, we've been told that it was going to be a building level decision, and here's where I agree with Paul in that, you know, it's a budgetary thing that mm-hmm. we get involved in. Mm-hmm. The other piece to it is the parents have only, they can be in a survey or, you know, they can make statements. They can approach us about the inconsistency. So, as board members, we do have an obligation, and that's where I think sometimes staff forgets about that when they get into thinking that things are being micromanaged. If the customer isn't really happy with how things are going, and they're not happy with the decision the administration's made on it, their only recourse is to talk to the board. So, and I think where it got a little bit muddied was, I think, again, I'm okay with where Paul's at with this right now, if we're going to get some consistency. But I think one of the issues was, you know, Stephanie had asked it to be placed on the agenda, and I just want to make sure we get this, you know, straightened out. A board member can ask for it to be on an agenda. It has to be placed on the agenda. You don't have the ability to block it from being on the agenda, and you were doing that. So that's a concern for me, that you just don't have that kind of power. I mean, you have to place it. Now, the board can say, okay, here's, you know, the board members that want a place can say what they want. The other board members can say, okay, great, thanks for listening to us. We're not going to do anything with it. That's the right. But you don't have the right to block that, which is what you were doing initially, was blocking and saying, we're not going to add this. You just don't have that authority.
Well, it was not the intention of having items considered to bring to the president meeting is to do what we did, which is to say to Paul, here's the intention behind this. Does this make sense? I mean, I hear what you're saying, Kurt, and there are numerous suggestions made by board members for board topics that either for timing purposes, you know, we're in the middle of budget discussions, to be putting things on that, you know, are not unimportant and not unimportant to discuss, but should be given consideration, which is what our policy says in terms of the flow of the agenda and where we are. So, you know, we've had this conversation before. It's not my intention to block or control or any of that. But I want to make sure that
doing that. Now, again, if you said,
my emails to Stephanie?
About it, yeah, I mean, if you talked about it and said, you know, we'll get to it, but we can't get to it till May. That mm-hmm. you do have a prerogative to set mm-hmm. the agenda and keep it flowing that way.
Right.
You don't have the ability, and I want to just make sure in public that we straighten this out. You do not have the ability to tell a board member they can't add something to the agenda.
I realize that, okay. but it is my job to help look at the big picture. So I will continue to do that. But I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I get it.
So on April 11th, what I'll bring back is our plan for that teacher specialization during the superintendent report. Does that sound?
And just to be clear, the only reason I was asking the board to discuss it was to address concerns of mm-hmm. inconsistency across the district, because
right.
I've been told
and that came out
to be a building level decision. So that's why.
But we had that.
You went in the buildings,
okay.
and you heard.
No, no, no. I'm just saying that during our conversation. I mean, we even had a discussion, but between the three of us.
Mm-hmm.
How that would look, and there was a disagreement.
Even then
we were.
But even then, you're.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I still believe that. Let me take that back. That is that we're going to have those conversations with building principals and myself, Karen, and Lori to make a consistent decision across the board.
I think it's not only the how we handle an odd number of sections, but how we're grouping our kids. Because I think the original logic was we're creating classes based on like their abilities or whatever else was factoring into making a different math class for a different literacy class, and that's obviously not what's happening at all of our schools, because some of our schools keep the kids together all day for different reasons. So how we're grouping our kids as well is interesting. You know, there's definitely, you know, I don't know that there's a good solution, but there's a lot of feedback from teachers that says, you know, you can't expect teachers to split their day between literacy and seeing. If you believe in specialization, then we have to support. I don't know that there's a solution.
That's the discussion, right?
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, but we'll bring it back April
11th. Good, thank you. Thank you, Kurt. Okay, any other?
Mine is the only other.
So I had an author. I didn't know if we were going to talk about it tonight. I had asked for some more data from school perceptions, and I didn't know if I had to get, if the board had to discuss it, if there's going to be
could any we, cost. Yeah, could we? Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I think I was supposed to have it on mine. So what are those pieces that we're looking at across the board to request from school perceptions to create? So we have.
Was that in your update?
It was in your update. Not this week, last week.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't this one Friday because there were three items.
I did yesterday.
And then we had also requested. I had requested what the cost was, and I know Erica, you're going to do a final report on cost for school perceptions. But it was in this one, so there were three items there.
Remind me again. I apologize.
Yeah.
My head cold and everything else.
We provided the list of
the summary. Well, that wasn't what I had.
And of the cost to obtain that information from SLIC, I think it was $40.
$4 per hour, yeah. Which is the original
contract. The board is, you know, did we get it right? We had three bullet points of things that we thought the board had was considering to ask additionally from school perceptions. But our question is, were those the three things? Were there anything else? Was there anything else that we're missing? And then from that, we would go back to school perceptions and make the request.
I was one of three things. Were more than over the.
So it was student survey longitudinal data report, staff survey broken out by teacher level positions, K1, 2, 3, 4, 5, principal data by schools.
Okay. So I'm going backwards around those. The principal data by schools, I mean, I don't think as a board that's critical for us.
My question was, I don't know what that meant.
I was thinking, would that be more helpful
for the school?
For Paul.
Paul, yeah.
Because this is the one survey he has where he has feedback for principals to break that out. That was more for you.
Mm-hmm. So can we stop on that one? Are we comfortable with us moving forward with that one? Just considering there's going to be a small price.
I got you. If you want it.
Thank you.
I was just thinking it would be helpful, but I don't need that.
I got you.
Do you need that? So
okay.
Clarify that.
Thank you. So number two.
The second one.
Staff survey broken up by teacher level positions.
The only thing, and now the two requests of mine there, the only thing that seem a little. My concern with this a little bit is that I'm asking for data that was in their presentation the last time, just so I can have comparative data. Mm-hmm. I wasn't asking them to create anything additional, and so in my mind, I don't feel that they should be charging us for that. I think, you know, we're used the same survey company, so we could have comparative data, get the same data that we had last time, so we're comparing apples to apples. What did it look like last time? What does it look like this time? So I kind of want to go back. I'd like to go back to school perceptions and say, look, we're asking for exactly what you provided last time. I don't know why they changed the reports, but they did. And I don't feel that there should be an additional cost to them. I mean, I think that's their job to give us the exact same data in the same format so we can compare it. And the one specifically, I mean, there's a lot where they presented it differently, but the only one piece that I was looking for is this chart. It was for our 21st century initiatives,
And all the questions when we asked, what advice would you give the district in terms of continuing teacher specialization? And last time we also did it, we had multi-age.
Right.
This time now we also have LEFs and EBLs. But so in the chart, this last time from school perceptions, it looked like this. They broke down all the positions, and they gave us, like, maintain current practice, return to traditional practice, too early to tell, I'm not sure. And they broke it down by position. This is in our report from school perceptions. This time, when they did it, I don't have it in front of me, but for specialization, for example, all they did was break out 2 through 5 teachers and everyone else.
And other teachers,
and
other staff.
So all I'm asking is that chart for that, for FLEFs and PBLs, to get it in the same format that we had it in last time so we can compare. Because I'm more curious, like, for specialization, you know, if you look at 2-3 teachers, you know, only, this was last time, so don't quote me on this, is data from 2014, but 2-3 teachers in 2014 said 56% said maintain it, 4-5 teachers, 73% said maintain it. So if you were to take that data the way they presented it to us this year, it might be 65% want to maintain it because they combined those two together. I would like to see it broken down further by position to see who really, you know, who really, where those numbers really fall. Even within second,
because I think the total was like 71% or 72% at the 2 to 5
right.
Or
well,
something,
and I don't know,
and then 86 or something.
Regardless of what it was,
but that's what you paid him for, and that's how you should.
This is how it was presented last time, and I definitely don't understand. I don't think we should be charged extra to just say present it in the exact same format you presented it last time. That's all I'm asking.
Well, let's ask him.
I don't think that's unreasonable. I mean, I would have expected it to be in the same format, unless we told, I don't know if we told him, we don't want it in that format anymore, you need to group it by these grades. Mm-hmm. If we did not tell him that, then I would have expected it to be presented the same way.
I have the, I did find, after you talked about that, I found the original memo that, that where you had taken the board request for data. And, you know, and to just, you know, just to school perceptions credit, we had a lot of information flowing back and forth through Erica in terms of what questions we wanted or what we wanted to change or things we wanted to add. So over the period of 6 months from when we started to where we ended, there was a lot of information going back and forth. I think it's a fair request.
But I don't think that's...
and it could be something, you could press a button and then boom, it just happens.
That is the thing that the data was
if this is what he does, he should have looked at how he had it last time and this time.
It's fine. We can ask him that.
And my other request was for the student data. What bothered me about the student data is for the staff, for the parents, he presented what did it look like last time, what did it look like this time, what's the differential. And for the student data, we didn't do that. The only thing on the student data report is what it looks like this time. And so I, in my mind, I guess, and when I asked that, he didn't really have a good answer. I'm like, well, we did a survey, we kept all the questions the same so we could compare, and now in our report, the only way to for us or anyone else to compare is, well, I have to look at this one, and I have to look at the last one and compare them. So another, as I said, I don't know that that's critical. I don't think anything from the I don't think any, and I'm not asking for that because I'm looking for something. It's more just maybe the engineer in me, it bothers me.
Right, you want to say apples and apples.
And we're trying to compare. I think that's valuable.
Sure.
Everybody good with that? All three of those?
I don't want to pay money to get that. I think that should have been provided to us in that form to be
we'll ask them.
To be honest.
Okay. Thank you. And that was all that was on the list. This was in Paul's update from the 18th. So.
Yeah. And then what about the student comments? I think we got them.
Thank you. Okay. Other is we have our next board coffee and conversation at the Glen Oak. They're still hosting us there, which is lovely. It is the second full weekend after we get back from break, so it's Saturday the 9th. And I don't know if people are around or not around, but you know, again, one or two board members too is preferable. And Erica, are you planning to be there too? Yeah.
I had told you that last time it was a very good thing to do.
Yeah, I've been able to be at them. They're great.
For that weekend, so I'll be out of town.
Yeah. So, is there anybody who knows that they could attend now? on April 9th? Could tell Erica? I mean, I'm available, but I've done it before, so if there's other people, I'm happy to relinquish my coffee seat. Happy to be there. Happy to have somebody else do it.
Sounds like you're drinking coffee.
All right, well, it's not me. And if you can come, please come, because we want to make sure we hold these. If we put dates out there, we want to follow through.
If you have trouble getting other board members and you can go out another week, I would do that.
All right. Well, we'll see if Joe's around.
Okay.
Let's see. But if anybody else looks at their calendar and can go, please let me know. I know, Stephanie, you want to be able to do it the last time and you weren't able to do it.
I know.
So
I'll look at my calendar.
Check your calendar. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I have one other. Sorry.
Okay.
I didn't finish before. While we were talking about surveys, I wanted to say something about the survey comments from the last meeting that kind of caught me off guard. I know it's here. The focus of the meeting kind of became about the board feedback. And it bothered me after the meeting because I felt the conversation took away from the rest of the survey and comments. And looking through the survey, there were 110 pages of staff comments. And 15 pages of them were about the board, but that's about 13%. And there were actually 145 pages of parent comments, which didn't include any specific board comments. That was not an area for the parents to comment on. There were some parents that commented and things about the board. I counted about a dozen parent comments about the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I mentioned this because it bothered me that was our focus, and I feel that I don't want to lose sight of the other 95 pages of comments, because mm-hmm. this is kind of the heart of what the staff, what the parents are saying for areas for improvement, things that they like, and these are the things that are impacting our teachers and our kids in our classroom, these other comments. In looking at the comments for what would you change about the district, I went through them all, and I went through each comment and tallied up all the different things that they talked about. Some commented about multiple things, so one comment counted for multiple different areas. But the number one thing that I saw, what would you change about the district, is we do too much change, we're changing too much, mm-hmm. it's constant.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the biggest takeaway from the staff comments about the district. So I want to make sure that we're paying attention to this and responsive to this. And, you know, follow-up comments that had a lot of feedback was resources, special ed, facilities, classroom space,
mm-hmm.
and a big litany of a lot of different things mm-hmm. in here. But I just want to make sure that we're going to come up with a plan to address these. I know we said at the meeting, like, yeah, we'll look at them, but I know in 2014 we also had probably just as many staff comments, and I never saw any, you know, things captured from there. What's the takeaway? What's our plan? I never saw it presented at a board meeting. Maybe it was done behind the scenes, so I just want to make sure that we are going to have a plan and get to the details of what people are saying here. So I feel like we walked mm-hmm. away from the last meeting not really focused on that and what's impacting our classroom. So I just wanted to mention that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you. I will say that I know that the impact, I think, of the board comments that were felt was what we were capturing at the last meeting, and I know that in talking to some of the principals at a couple of meetings after that the takeaways out of what you're describing, for instance, the wanting to keep things more consistent, et cetera, I mean, isn't that's not a new issue, certainly. We all know that. But that's part of the action planning along with the HumanX climate survey, which was our baseline this year. And I know we've asked about what those next steps are, and the principals are all working on those in order to codify what are the things we want to make sure we're doing which affect the climate and culture. So, you know, I hear what you're saying, and that can't get lost. But I do know that from talking with them and Paul mentioning this too, that is dispersed in the buildings, and that's where the impact is going to be felt. Principals, assistant principals, teachers, staff, you know, with what is coming out of that to work on. So those reports, those...
Specific. They're just, you know, they're not building-specific comments. They're district-wide.
Right. But a part of that is lives in the buildings in terms of what they're going to be doing to help to manage some of the, you know, some of those changes. And as Paul has said, deepen and keep it where it is. So the issue around consistency on teacher specialization, those kind of things, are going to impact that. I agree. So I think it's important. The other thing I want to mention is that we have under upcoming meetings, and this ties into what you're talking about, Stephanie, but we do have a date on May 4th for our board governance evaluation, which is an online tool. And so I think that's ours to own, and we can be working on those things separately while the district is working on those other issues, all important, no question. So I would add that to upcoming meetings. We have Monday, April 11th, 2016, a regular board meeting. Again, 7 o'clock start time here at CSO. And then April 25th, Monday, 2016, regular board meeting, 7 o'clock here at CSO. And then May 4th, which is a Wednesday, special workshop starts at 6:30, and we'll be getting data around that in order to do that online tool for us as well. All right. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. Item B, collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. And item C, the placement of individual students in special education programs and other matters relating to individual students. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Mr. Ellis, thank you. All right.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. All right. Board will not be taking any action when it returns from closed session. All right, let's return to open session. It is now 11:03 and 42 seconds. I just like having that little change. We have a motion to adjourn the regular meeting.
Motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.